Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, deep breath. That was quite a adrenaline rush, 2 hours, Eric. But the standout moment for me was that crowd reception for Britt Baker. They gave us a handful of things we could be talking about, but she just stands there and owns the space that she's in. She really does come across as a pillar star right now for this company. And I was not convinced a year and a half ago that was going to be her destiny, but it has been a slow, earned journey with her performances. Your take on this, obviously Pittsburgh crowd going nuts for her.
I will say, first of all, I'm shocked that you did not lead with the real news of this show, Wade.
Reality show.
Yes, you stepped on my joke. Thank you.
I was hoping to tweak you.
I knew it was. I know what a big fan you are of Cody and his over-the-topness and his grandioseness, and so I was hoping to pimp you with that, but you beat me to the punch, so congrats. Britt Baker, to your question.
Yeah.
You know, the Penguins jersey, The I love you Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh hello. They leaned into it, right? She was going to be cheered
right.
The whole town. If this were Vince McMahon booking, she would have done a job to anybody, right?
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
not. I think to me the braver play, and I'm a bit of a contrarian in it by nature as a journalist. The braver play would have been to try and turn the crowd on her with some anti-Pittsburgh Elias, you know, healing on the hometown thing, but that probably wouldn't have worked anyway. So instead they leaned into it and, you know, Red Velvet got booed. But probably even if they weren't in Pittsburgh, this would have happened anyway, I think. I mean, it's just a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, to your broader point about the arc of Britt's career in AEW, boy, was she a flop the first 6 months or the first few months. And then in that, I think it was maybe January 2020 cruise, she started healing on poor Tony Schiavone about his interim career as a barista at Starbucks. And it's an upward trajectory ever since. You know, she had the injury and they even kept her on TV last year, I think during the pandemic with the injury, right?
Yep.
And you know, she ended up in the dumpster, you know, in that Raw-like segment with Swole on that one show. And here she is. She is a vital part of Dynamite just about every week.
Who are you most excited about her facing? You know, what when we get past Britt Baker, who do you give a B+, A-, A grade to in terms of the job AEW has done building up as kind of the money opponent for her? How long or short is that list?
I mean, I guess it's at this point, based on who's in the company, it's two. It's a rematch against Hikaru Shida, whenever they decide to go back to that, and a rematch against Thunder Rosa, whenever they decide to go back to that. And that the Thunder Rosa thing is based almost, you know, largely on the bloody match they had on Dynamite earlier this year. Do you have anybody else on your list?
No, I don't have anybody on my list. I mean, and it's not that everyone's like a F or a D. I just think my point in posing that question is she's really coming across as a star right now, and they really need somebody who there aren't 4 to 8 WWE women who seem like bigger stars than the number two wrestler in the women's division in AEW. Like, they got to figure that out. It's not Chris Statlander. It's not Red Velvet. You know, it's not Nyla Rose. I mean, because you can name, you know, four to six, if not eight women in WWE who you would just go, oh, yeah, you know, They're more established and firmly as top tier challengers. So I just that's a challenge for AW over the next 6 months and beyond. But I mean, hopefully they can solve that quicker than that. It's just come up with some whether it's signings or do a better job promoting, you know, recognizing who they have, who is deserving of it, and get them positioned for that. I mean, Hikaru Shida was good, but I don't see her opposite of Britt Baker as a babyface. You know, and it really does come down to needing some heels. And Jade Cargill is probably going to be that person, but she's really green, and they just seem to be really taking their time with that. So, again, it's not like they're all Fs. It's just there's some Cs and C-pluses. But you want to have a B-plus or an A-minus or an A, you know, at least, you know, three of them who are in that range who are ready to help you make money with Britt Baker.
One of the common complaints about AEW's women's division is there doesn't seem to be very much planning. They have one, it's at this point, I think you can safely call it a token match on Dynamite, usually in the same time period between 8:15 and 8:30 or so, and whatever quarter hour that is. And it's really, AEW seems to squander a lot of those slots promoting NWA women's matches and just not focusing on their own, building up their own stars, to your point. And so no one seems ready. I mean, if you look at the start, they started out okay. They had the swerve where you thought Nyla Rose was going to win and Riho won. And, you know, she's professional enough, even if she's kind of small and doesn't do English promos. You know, so they had that plan, and then they went to Nyla, and then Shida, right? So we're almost 2 years in. They've had four women's champions, but there's never really been sort of the thought that they seem to place on the men's heavyweight division of who's going to challenge for the AEW championship. I mean, the same thing is also true with Miro and the TNT title. They used to seem to have a plan, and Miro's had squash match since one of them or two of them since the last pay-per-view, Double or Nothing. So it's not just the women's division that AEW doesn't always seem to have a plan for.
Yeah, it's just they have the fewest options to fix things quickly. And, you know, part of that is a lot of money is going out for some big male signings. And, you know, will there be a Charlotte Flair or, you know, a Becky Lynch or a Bayley or somebody who will become available? And I'm just not saying they're my top three picks that I think AEW should chase, just the first three names that came to mind. But it's not a super deep lineup in WWE either of people who can make an impact. It's just I think they need to, you know, put some work in and figure that out. And a big part of it is being not just being somebody that Excalibur or Kenny love because they had knockout dragout matches overseas. I mean, this is an American television show where fans are going to look for somebody who they feel that can invest in for a wide array of reasons. And some of that has to do with your in-ring skills, but it also has to do with communicating in some form or fashion. There's different ways to do it, but having that connection and that you make with the fans that Britt Baker has made, not from high spots in the ring or four-star matches, a little bit from bleeding, but mostly having that X factor and that swagger. I compare her swagger to CM Punk. I think, you know, Punk just walked out and was like, I own this ring and I'm going to talk and you guys are going to listen and you're going to hang on my every word. You know, she has that going for her. So, I mean, yeah, we could have started a lot of places at the top of the show, but being in Pittsburgh and all that, I was one of them. Eric, what did you think of the job they did promoting Rampage? What were the strengths and weaknesses of what they did to push this new show starting 48 hours from now?
Well, the way this show was structured, it was sort of, you know, you had the big Jericho match and Angle at the end, and then they went with the big Angle and the big reveal, although there's probably going to be a swerve, I assume, with Christian versus Kenny at All Out. They just tossed it out there almost as an afterthought because I don't think they wanted to put I'm hoping they didn't want to put too fine a point on it because they know they're actually not going to deliver that match ultimately on September 5th in Chicago. So I was a little bit thrown. If I'm an average AEW viewer, I was a little bit thrown. Why are Kenny and Christian wrestling for the Impact title on Rampage? So it seems like it was a little too much. I don't think they quite established why Impact titles are up for grabs on AEW shows. Miro and Fuego del Sol. He's a job guy who's now 1-25, and he lost on Dark Tuesday to Daniel Garcia. So I know they set up the angle with Miro tossing him around, I think last week, but that doesn't seem to be It seems like a palate cleanser after Kenny and Christian get done. And Britt Red Velvet, they did do a good job of, in that they shot an angle and that there was a brawl and Britt got to promote the match. I guess quantity maybe over quality, or was it both? Do you think it was both? Because they certainly did a lot to promote it in terms of raw mentions, you know, sheer number of mentions. But did you think the mentions, the angles were quality enough?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I threw to you because I didn't have a super strong opinion. I think, you know, they had the commercial. It aired at least once. Sometimes I'm fast forwarding through breaks. It seems good, but I don't think they did anything to explain like what the purpose of the show is. But that's because it might not have a purpose beyond what's self-evident, which is, well, it's another hour of network programming that we're getting paid to deliver, and we have a pretty deep roster. And so just, you know, tune in for an hour on Friday nights or watch us on DVR on demand Saturday or Sunday is kind of their offer. Last week they talked about the announce team. I'm kind of big on sort of having a mission statement or a purpose to something. And this does just feel like it's the third hour Dynamite, but, you know, you wait 2 days for it. And it's fine. You know, it's fine. In the first half hour or so of the show, I was like, are they doing a good enough job really driving this home other than, you know, obviously the angle with Christian and Kenny, which we'll talk about. But by the end of the show, I mean, I think you had a pretty good idea, if you're paying any attention at all, that there's something happening on Friday. Having Kenny defending, and you brought this up, the Impact Championship against Christian, because Christian mentioned, yeah, at the meeting I had with Tony Khan, Scott D'Amore was also there. I mean, this is fine. I'm still trying to come to terms. I'm trying to figure out, of the million people watching Dynamite, give or take, how many, like, have even heard of Scott D'Amore or could pick him out of a lineup with, you know, three other, you know, people? Who's the late-night CBS host? Corden, James Corden. Could they, like, tell him between Scott D'Amore and James Corden? I don't know. I don't have a feel for that. But I just think if you're AEW, it's kind of time to explain what this Impact relationship is and why the Impact title that Kenny holds is being defended on AEW Rampage. Like, it sort of sends a confusing signal. I don't think too many – I think obviously a lot of people just know. Like people listening to this, they just get it. But you're trying to draw people who are just watching casually. They're not invested in social media and podcasts throughout the week. They just want to be entertained for a couple hours. And it just feels like no explanation's ever been offered for what the heck's going on with Kenny and Impact and holding that belt. And now it's being sanctioned and defended on Rampage. Why not on Impact? So that all just – it just felt like I wanted something more. I get – they're working backwards from the angle they're going to do that in all likelihood is going to lead to that not being the main event of All Out. I get that. But when you work backwards from something, sometimes it doesn't make sense as you live it in real time. And I just didn't think it made a ton of sense. Not a big deal, not a big gripe, but that's kind of where I'm sort of like, yeah, it's okay. But they just aren't giving me someone who kind of craves logic and structure and explanations. They're not just fulfilling that for me.
Well, and the to me, it was compounded by the fact that just, you know, before, in between the post-match angle and the match they had, the opening match, they announced Christian versus Kenny at All Out, and then it's, wait,
yes,
it's also Christian versus Kenny on Friday? Which is it, right? It just,
yep,
that's got to be confusing to the average viewer. I mean, on a good week, it's hard to keep track of what matches they're setting up are airing when, and now they've added a Friday show in addition to the next week's show. And sometimes it'll be, you know, in the weeks before a pay-per-view, the pay-per-view they're setting up. So it's, you need a scorecard to keep track of all the matches. I literally had to write down what match was when and took some notes for this podcast. Yeah.
I think they could do, I think it would behoove them to evaluate how they hype upcoming matches now that they've added Rampage to the mix. I don't know how much people, you know, book their wrestling viewing schedule around specific matches and lineups. I think it's good to mention them for sure. It makes them seem like a bigger deal when you bother to book them ahead of time and announce them ahead of time. So I think there's a kind of a collective general importance to emphasizing and announcing ahead of time matches. But graphically, it is, it's kind of, I mean, you almost need to have like some sort of QR code you can shine your phone at to then give you Google reminders if, you know, breaking down the lineup, their website is terrible. I mean, like it's incredibly inconsistent in terms of whether you can go there and find lineups for matches. Their Twitter account is not that much better. I mean, it's, you scroll through it and it's like there's this graphic and you have to go by, based on color coding and the small print. Was that just on Dark, or is it on Dark tonight? Was it on Dark Elevation, or is it on Dynamite this week, or is this some announcement of a pay-per-view? It's kind of work to figure it out. Even Jim Ross has made, you know, snide comments every now and then of, you know, pay attention, folks. Got a lot coming at you. It's been a while since he's done that, but that kind of bottom of the second hour throw a bunch of matches at you is a level more complicated. Winding back to another point you made, though, Eric, the announcement that Christian is now officially getting the match, it seemed like a leap. It felt like we were heading that direction, but I don't like watching Dynamite and then thinking, oh, since last week's Dynamite, something was announced that I missed that now is just taken for granted. And they sort of worked backwards from the announcement to explain how it happened, that Christian was number one contender, but, you know, not everyone number one contender is – at that moment, he's number one, is going to get a match granted to him at a pay-per-view for the title. That's not the system, so, or that's as it's been explained. So everything just sort of, it felt a little arbitrary and confusing. Again, not a huge deal, because in the end, we know what's up. Christian's fighting Kenny on Friday, and they've at least are purporting to have locked in Christian also going after the AEW title. I would have liked a little bit more reaction from the announcers themselves to go, this is a really big deal. Can you imagine by the first end of the first week of September, Christian could be both the Impact and AEW champion, and make kind of a bigger deal out of it and explain it. And it just didn't really end up happening. So I think by the end of the show, a little bit of that was lost because it was a little confusing.
Yeah. And when you start a show with this, the sort of the big news of the show, in my view, is usually about the world title, and it's confusing. And it also, to me, it took me a while to get back into the show after, after these big announcements that were somewhat confusing and I had to sort it out. I'm like, wait, okay, rewind. Yes, okay, that's what they said. I wasn't into the second match as much, that at that point. So, and they did. I know you're big on announcing, you know, what the main event is, and they did that at the start of the show with MJF's promo. But then they didn't come back to it until right before the commercial break at the end. So they maybe another announcement in the middle would have served them well. Hey, don't forget, we've got Chris Jericho and MJF coming up, Wardlow coming up with the fourth labor.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess, you know, QT Marshall is formatting the shows, and he had to squeeze time to have some goofy angle for his for himself in there. So maybe there wasn't time for another mention.
I think retroactive, looking at this with 2020 hindsight, I'll put it that way, I would have built up all show a major announcement from AEW management. You know, it doesn't have to be Tony Khan and Scott D'Amore on camera. Shivani can read a statement or, you know, whatever. And just say, we're going to have, Kenny Omega is going to have an announcement, and it's not what he thinks it's going to be regarding his future title defense, an upcoming title defense, and just kind of be vague about it and mysterious about it. And then have a segment where you just explain, you know, Christian is the number one contender and he has now been granted the championship, but there's a catch, and kind of like I felt like they did it deductively. Like, here's what happened, and now we're going to throw you for the next few minutes little nuggets of information about how it happened with a twist at the end. And I think for this, it's just a simple, more straightforward, here's the deal. Christian, you have been granted the title match at All Out. Christian's excited. And then have some sort of rationalization or explanation for why Impact title is being defended on Rampage, the debut episode at the top of the show. And maybe they just couldn't come up with something. But, yeah, I don't know. It just felt a little scrambled.
And then, that first, I don't know, the first 30 to 35 minutes of the show, it was very load bearing because one of the unintentional comedy parts was Jungle Boy having to grab the microphone right before they're going to commercial and say, don't forget, we've got a tag team title shot because we're the number one contenders. So that was unintentionally humorous on their part.
Because to me, closing Impact, closing Dynamite, And it was fine. Closing Dynamite with MJF announcing the stip next week. I mean, that's fine. That's not a bad end to the show by any means. I mean, that's the second best way to end, or one of the two best ways. I'm not even going to stack them in order here. But if you close with Christian and Omega in a stare down, and Omega holding up the Impact World title, and Don Callis throwing a fit while Kenny's trying to put up a brave front, and you close with Jim Ross going, by God, this Friday, tune in, it's going to be huge. Christian might win the first of two titles that he plans to take out of Kenny Omega over the next few weeks. Something like that. Like, to me, that's hyping Rampage. And that's a really big deal that is coming up Friday, and you build to it, and that you don't always have to end with a match. And so, to me, again, there's multiple ways that this can work. I would have liked that a little bit better, and I think they could have done a better job explaining it. And then at least this week, the final moment you have is a stare down between the two guys who are going to be wrestling, and the bell's going to be ringing, and Jim Ross can say 48 hours and 1 minute from now, the bell's going to ring for these two guys, and like really drive that home to pop that first rating. They'll be fine with ratings, especially with the week from Friday and everything that people are anticipating. So anyway, I don't want to belabor this, but I think the fact that we're trying to talk through and work this out is it is a trait of AEW historically that sometimes it feels like the people writing the show are thinking every audience member is as immersed in the minutiae of all the decision-making and social media and podcasts and announcements as they are, and they lose sight of the last 6 days and 22 hours that people have lived not thinking a lot about Dynamite, who are tuning in and want it to all make sense.
Yes. Is it possible they didn't lean into and overhype the Christian thing later in the show because they know the match on Friday is effectively going to be an angle to set up, you know, to eliminate Christian from the All Out title picture, perhaps?
Yeah, but I mean, that might be their reason, but I'd say, don't worry about it.
Yeah, fundamentally,
yeah,
they don't have to get – they just have to get to Friday at this point. They don't have to get to All Out. That story is still going to unfold. And I would agree with you that the traditional best way to remind your viewers as you're going off the air would have been to have that show closing angle where Omega's holding up the belts and Christian is in his face and they're jaw-to-jaw. And a reminder from the announcers of the hard sell. They didn't do the hard sell at the end for Friday.
I think one thing, and then we'll introduce the show and get to culture. But I think it's a good discussion because, I mean, with the addition of Rampage, they're going to be hyping two to three things at once now. They're going to be the next Rampage, the next Dynamite, and the pay-per-view. Fortunately, they don't announce dark matches ahead of time. If that was ever a smart idea, it isn't now. I think maybe one of the things to do is have a graphic that on the screen and it's split screen and it's like it says in big words, Friday – this Friday, Rampage, and just show the top match or two. And then to the right of it, say, next Wednesday, Dynamite, and have one, two, or three matches. If there's one big match that's going to sell the show, just throw one at us. If there's two, then put two. If it's sort of an ensemble show, then put three. But stop there. And then have a website that actually lists all the matches and let people go there if they want to know about Dark Order are doing next week. You know, like they just – I think it's at a point where you want to prune, is that the word? Don't give us so much to think about that we've forgotten about the important stuff. And I think with Rampage now, it's important for them to kind of clean up what I think has been inconsistent, if not a weakness for them, which is kind of that clarity, the clarity of what's important versus just throwing everything at you by having the announcers just, I mean, there's one of the early matches. The announcers were talking about upcoming matches instead of calling the action in the ring for like half the match. And it just feels like information overload. All right, let's introduce the show here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 11th, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program and the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and also pwtorch.com and host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and podcast. Yesterday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net and the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast joined me on the Tuesday flagship, and we talked about a lot of topics, but we led with the NXT WWE dynamic, and it was an interesting discussion. It's been an interesting week as far as that goes between everything with Rich Fan and my talk with Jason Powell yesterday. So check that out if you haven't yet. That's our Blue Logo Show, search Wade Keller, and subscribe not only to this, the Red Logo Show, the post shows, but also the Blue Logo Show's our regular podcast. The other voice you've heard so far is Eric Kroll. Speaking of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, he is a former columnist with the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter circa 1990. Yeah, way back then, like before Bill Clinton was a public figure. Nationally. Yep. Eric was writing columns for Pro Wrestling Church Newsletter. You can read those in our back issue section. Over 1,700 back issues when you go VIP. Eric, welcome to the co-host here. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
We would be the grizzled middle-aged veterans, I think, who would be our tag team name here.
Yes. Good to have you back. There's so much more to talk about on the show and look ahead to Rampage and all that. We want to do it with our callers, too. So if you are listening and want to join in, our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And if you want to be on the show, you've got to push one on your keypad after you call in. That'll flag you on our switchboard, and we'll know you want to be brought on the show as opposed to just listening in the background. So when you call, push one. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. I think that's everything I need to mention before we start on calls. A little bit shorter line this week for calls, so it's a good chance if you want to be a first-time caller or you don't want to be on hold a long time, give us a call. All right, first up is Greg in Kansas City. Greg, thank you for calling. What do you want to talk about regarding Dynamite tonight?
Yeah, give a few thoughts on the show, and then I'd like to chime a little bit on the women's discussion since you opened up with it, and we've been having a couple back and forths on it via the email. So, but first of all, I will say for anything else that the hour long that you and Rich Van discussed NXT was excellent listening. I recommend that to everybody out there who hasn't listened yet. I think Rich Van has a really very well-rounded, and I think largely correct perspective on the NXT situation. So I would recommend that to people long-term. So anyway, a few general thoughts on the show. I mean, it's just a ton of stuff happening. I thought the peak of the show was the opening six-man tag team match. And at first, you know, I was a bit critical of like, you know, you're just getting guys on TV to be fed to the elite or whatever. But then seeing Dante Martin, it's like, I know they've got a loaded roster, but this guy has to be like, I know he's young, but like, you know, this guy's got to get more opportunities on Dynamite in the very near future, or, you know, in terms of maybe even a televised match with Kenny Omega or something, because I mean, like, this would be a striking while the iron is hot moment with a guy like this. And I mean, you know, I don't think you put a title on him right this moment, but like, capitalize off that and give this man more to do on television, I would say. That's my first thought.
Well,
and then a couple of
pause there, Greg, because I do think it's worth underlining what you said. I thought Dante had a star-making night tonight. I mean, it just, you know, obviously Kenny and the Bucks had a role in that, but he seems like somebody, if you're AEW, you're looking at him going, is he another guy we add to our list along with Darby and Jungle Boy and Sammy Guevara, you know, that category of athletic wrestlers who have a distinct personality and that connection with the crowd that I was talking about, or at least a developing connection. Eric, did it jump out to you as, okay, this is a guy who's more than just a, you know, interchangeable tag team high spot guy without a personality who will just sort of fill time on Dark and occasionally do jobs on Dynamite? Is this someone you look at as something more than that, maybe coming into tonight, but especially after tonight?
Yeah, I mean, my notes say Dante Martin sure got a platform tonight. I mean, the crowd went nuts for the near falls. Everyone knew what the outcome of that match was going to be, and it was going to be the Elite going over, and despite all that, the crowd still popped huge for the guy because he was so good and athletic. I think you could have had Mike Seidel do the job here and not Dante Martin. I mean, there's a medium ground between putting him over, right, doing a star-making thing and having him pin one of the Bucks or Kenny and having him do the job and somebody else doing the job would have been good. It kind of deflated it a little bit. I see Dante Martin, you know, he's got, I wrote down Ricochet, future Ricochet in my notes. I think, I hope he isn't so bland and has more of a personality or develops one, right? He is coached, lots of good promo people in AEW who could help him out along. He's only 20 years old. So, I mean, such a long line in AEW. His brother comes back, push him as a lead babyface tag team, top babyface tag team, if you think they're ready for it and continue to develop them.
All right, Greg, back to you.
Yeah, agreed about the Seidels, because I don't think there's nearly as much, like, certainly not as much momentum going on with them as somebody like a Dante Martin. Then a couple of other thoughts. It seemed to me that the match this week with Wardlow and Jericho, it wasn't much to write home about, but it seemed to me that that match was really, I didn't fully focus on it, but it seemed it was largely served the purpose of, like, hiding those weaknesses or Jericho's wrestling game at this point, in terms of, I thought, like, maybe the criticism of the Hoovy match, which was no good, was listened to, and it's like, you know, we'll get a match out there where he gets beat up more majority of the time. For me watching, it seemed like it played a good job of not focusing on Jericho's obvious non-strength at this point and his age and the kind of condition he's in at this point. So I thought that was positive. And then a couple other things. I fully agree with you, Wade. I think you pointed this out in multiples of your live reviews, is that one thing AEW does so effectively that, like, WWE could learn from is featuring people. And I understand with 3 hours of Raw, like, you know, it's like you got a lot of time to fill it. But the way, like, people who aren't on television, don't have a match who or a segment on the show, you know, they get video promo time, you know, a reminder that these things are going on and these things are happening. I mean, it's basically like every major program I could think of in the company that was not featured in a match or in-ring segment got promo time. And I will say that I think that Pac and Andrade actually be doing something in the ring soon rather than just promos. But, I mean, in general, that's a strength of AEW's. It's like making feel like everybody is, or at least everybody's being used in terms of stories or have something going on, gets promo time. Everyone from Miro to Starks and Cage. I mean, so I think that was definitely a strength and something WWE
and Santana and Ortiz too.
Especially on SmackDown, like people don't get on TV every week, or instead of repetitive 2-minute matches to build up an Intercontinental title match, you could have vignettes or promos. I mean, I think that's something that AEW really does effectively.
Yeah, I thought after the Santana and Ortiz vignette, their promo, you know, it was more of a video, a little video than a promo, but or kind of a hybrid. It was like, this is something AEW wasn't doing consistently and not doing consistently well in the first, you know, 4, 6, 8, 10 months of the company. It was an ongoing issue. It felt like they just pointed a camera at the ring, and it was low budget in a sense that they didn't put a lot of time into production. And now they're putting more time into production, and it just adds that there's some elbow grease being put into in between match segments, and there's a high effort per minute that's going into some of these features, and it makes the show feel more polished. There's more pizzazz, and there's a lot of people who are just happy point a camera at the ring and let the wrestlers wrestle, and I get that, but if you step back and go, what's going to bring other people in? What's going to help get wrestlers over? What's going to help make people feel more invested in matches when the bell rings? It's the stuff that they spend 30 to 60 seconds on now 3-4 times per show that just remind you of wrestlers who are on the show. And it's a much better approach than WWE having the same people on every week wrestling each other in some incarnation. I mean, how many Santana Ortiz versus FTR matches would we have had by now if Vince McMahon and company were booking Dynamite instead of Tony Khan and company? It's what I like, but I also think, objectively, not subjectively, I think it's just smart to take that approach. Eric, how do you think they're doing now compared to early on?
Oh, yeah, it's obviously much better. I don't know that it's because you shame them into it or what, but, you know, it's adding to the show, and that's good. I wanted to circle back to Andrade and Pac.
Oh, yeah.
I, too, wrote down in my notes, God, I hope they do something more to set this up in the ring, and then I tried to work out what that would be. And, you know, I think they see – my guess is they're going to do – they already announced Pac Andrade and All Out. My guess would be they're going to go back to the Lucha Brothers versus Young Bucks at All Out as the tag match because, you know, they're burning Jurassic Express next week, and they don't really have anybody else ready.
And they dropped a hint on tonight's show, so that's a good clue too.
Right. And so but so then what do you do to, you know, you don't want Pac to lose. Presumably he's going to job for Andrade at All Out. You don't want Penta or Phoenix to take the fall because they need to be built up into tag team champions. And then who the heck does Andrade even team up with if you did a 6-man tag? So I agree with Greg. I'd like to see them do something, but what would that be? I guess, is it a run-in after an Andrade squash, or, you know, what is it?
I liked, by the way, just a little attached comment on this, but not exactly what you're saying, is I just like Chavo's presentation compared to the first week. I think he adjusted quickly. I think Jake Barnett over ProWrestling.net said, you know, he doesn't think he's needed. I hope I'm remembering it was him and him right. But I think Chavo dressing for the part, matching Andrade's threads, is important to for cohesiveness with the brand. And, you know, you want to find that dynamic. You know, what you want to believe, like you have no doubt what the Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns dynamic is when you watch them on TV. You have no doubt, you know, what the Jim Cornette Midnight Express, RIP, Bobby Eaton, by the way, what the dynamic was with them. And on, you want to have Don Callis and Kenny. You know, I think that, especially if you watch Impact, it's more established what the dynamic is and what brings them together. You want Chavo and Andrade on the screen together to feel like it makes sense and you kind of understand their roles. And Andrade has a presence to him, but you're not going to be able to communicate all the bullet points unless you have somebody like Chavo talking for him. And Chavo is less, you know, giddy and jokey and unserious. He's got a little bit of an edge to him, which was something I always thought would benefit him, as entertaining as he has always been. If he wanted to move up the card, being a little more serious and having a little more edge, and I think he showed that. Do you agree with that, Eric, that Chavo's seems like a good fit with this small sample size at this point?
Yeah, he's okay. The first week he got a baby face reaction and you could tell it threw him.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he didn't quite know how to handle it, and he really did not establish himself. I'm still not sold on Andrade. I'd like to see him have a really, if he's going to be able to get it and move up the card and be a, you know, heel challenger in AEW. Pac is sure a guy who can bring out a great match in him at All Out. So I'm taking a wait and see attitude.
Sure. No, that's totally fair. All right, Greg, anything else for us before we move on?
Yeah. And then I thought, you know, even something else by AEW is even the segments that I don't really care about. Like, I thought the middle of the show, basically from the six person tag, from the Hardy Orange Cassidy six man tag all the way to like the QT Marshall segment, was kind of just there. It was just filler for example. But like, I mean, I have to give AEW credit, things that I don't care about. Like, somebody was pointing this out to me, when you have a hot product, even the stuff that's, you know, typically not so good or wouldn't be, may not be reflected upon so well, things like, you know, your Orange Cassidy or things like that, the crowd eats it up. So while I may not care for it, it's like, you know, the crowd's eating it up, and when the crowd eats something up, I mean, you go with it. So that's another feather in that cap. And then just real quick to move over to the women's division discussion before I let you guys go. Chris Statlander is being built up for a title match with Britt. That's a possibility. But then I would say the last thing is that with the conversation, I think that I've been very critical, as you well know, but like the way like Britt and Red Velvet, I mean, it's a shame that, you know, Velvet gets this year-long winning streak almost, only to basically she's being fed to Britt in her hometown. I understand the logic behind that, but at the same time, it's like I understand it's like there's not a ton of people to choose from, but at the same time, I feel like more could be done to get more people on the show, like other than just Britt, and then just like Chris Statlander, like get Orange Cassidy on the show twice a night. So I feel like more could be done in that direction. It's a complicated conversation. Like, you know, WWE, I think, has a much more solidified women's division. As we talked about the other night, you know, they need to do more to invest in like non-title women's programs. But at the same time, it's like, I still don't believe, for example, like there's no reason why like Ishida should be wrestling exclusively on YouTube for 3+ months. I feel like those are things that can be done without just completely leaving people off TV.
Yeah. Good points. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Eric, anything you want to follow up on there, on air?
Just the women's talk. I saw somewhere within the last couple months as Kenny Omega was interviewed somewhere and was asked, he made the plug. I hope, you know, Rampage can become a place where we have more women's wrestling. I guess if you earmark one of the three or four matches they're going to have a week on Rampage as a women's match, that actually allows you to maybe have more than one storyline going at once that gets the TV time on Dynamite and isn't just women racking up a win streak on Dark and Dark Elevation that not as many people are watching. So maybe help is on the way.
All right, very good. Our number 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 on your keypad when you want to be on the show. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com or email. Let's go to Milwaukee next. Area code 262. I believe it's Milwaukee. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Mark from – I'm from Milwaukee, but I live in Chicago now.
Cool. Thanks, Mark, for calling. Yeah, what is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
I mean, I thought it was a decent show. The main event, I thought it would have been a better main event, but it was, you know, you kind of saw it coming from, you know, a mile away, and the result coming in. I was really underwhelmed. I don't know if you guys have talked about this, but I was really underwhelmed by MJF's final stipulation.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah, what explain why you thought, I mean, I think it's apparent, but go ahead and elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you're going to have, like, a gauntlet match where he has to wrestle the four members of the – or three other members of the Pinnacle before. But, you know, God forbid he can't have his entrance. That's the thing that's, you know, just beyond the pale.
Yeah, I would have liked – I mean, it's definitely a topic we haven't gotten to yet that I want to spend some time on, the match itself and also the stips. I wish MJF explained a little more why – like, if a genie gives you three wishes and you say, you know, well, I'd like my dishwasher to not make as much noise. You're like, are you kidding me? You used one of your three wishes for that? Like, he can do any – I guess if it's right next to your bedroom and it's just been driving nails for years. Maybe there's a better example out there. But to not explain why he's not stacking the odds more against Jericho, I think he can. MJF's brilliant on promos. Like, explain and go, Chris, I don't want to take everything away from you. I want my victory over you to mean something. But this Judas effect, you lean on that way too hard. Like, so I don't know. Like, approach it in some way where we get inside MJF's head about why he's – what his motivation is for what he's saying. And I get him just being like, I don't want to hear the fans sing that song, so I'm taking it away from you. And I guess the joke on MJF is going to be the fans might sing it anyway. I don't know. But, yeah, I was sort of – The whole thing has been sort of like, oh, you have to win with a move off the top rope. It doesn't feel like he's out for blood on Jericho. It's just sort of random, weird restrictions. Eric, what have you thought, and what do you think about tonight?
I mean, I thought it's been pretty good so far. Tonight was a Wardlow squash until this very brief Jericho comeback with cheating. And where they, you know, it was just powerbomb after powerbomb, as the announcers noted. It felt rushed to me. I'm like, wait, whoa, we're doing this on TV next week? I assumed it was going to be an all-out match because it's certainly, you know, got enough marquee value to be on the pay-per-view. And, you know, otherwise, where do you stick those guys on the card?
I know.
I don't know if Jericho has a tour coming up. I'm not a Fozzy fan, so I haven't looked at the – I don't keep religious tabs on their tour dates, but I know that – I think they have some coming up this fall. And so, to your points, MJF just – it seemed like the time was running down. He only had a minute left, and so he just blurted out the stipulations. If it wasn't – the match wasn't taking place next week, I assumed where they were going, they were going to tease. Well, next week I will tell you what the stipulations for your fifth labor are, right?
Yeah.
Draw it out a little bit more. And that would make sense if you were saving it for the pay-per-view because you still got a few weeks between now and September 5th. But they didn't do that. They just – it just, you know, let it breathe a little bit more. They've gone – and then the other problem is we're going to have Jericho doing a fifth match in a row, the fifth week in a row.
Oh,
I mean, he's looked gassed since, you know, Nick Gage. So, you know, I don't know.
He's looked gassed for longer than that, but that's me.
Yeah.
And other people seem blind to it. But, I don't know if he's not taking care of himself or he just needs a break or you know, I get, you know, the other argument / apologist's claim is he's selling the grind of this Blazers of Jericho thing. And it's like, it's a little eye rolling, but I mean, if he's doing, it's sort of like when he gained a bunch of unflattering weight, he said, oh, I did that because the Japanese take people who drink beer all night and get beer guts more seriously because they look more like a heavyweight. And I'm just like, really? You're going to now take pride in having a big beer gut because you did it on purpose? No, you like your beer and you're older and it's hard to lose the weight. Let's be honest. Don't bullshit us. And so, anyway, we'll see. We'll see if he comes back a little more spry. But I mean, on Twitter, you know, thread after thread, you know, Jericho looks spent. He looks worn out. It looks like it's over for him. And I haven't heard that you know, sentiment before. I think these last few weeks really have, you know, made people think, God, maybe he is, you know, kind of hit that wall.
Yeah, I can't imagine him going back to New Japan for a feud, you know, to wrestle anybody. He would get, well, they can't laugh in New Japan presently. They can only clap or withhold
right.
their clapping, depending.
Yeah.
You know, he'd get laughed out of the building, I would think, at this, you know, with the way he looks. And I don't want to body shame the guy, but I don't get paid presumably seven figures to be a pro wrestler. So.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, anything else?
Yeah. So I mentioned I'm from Chicago. I'm going to be at Rampage in 9 days. So can I ask a couple of CM Punk questions about that show?
Yeah, go for it.
So they've been about as subtle as a jackhammer with, you know, the fact that he's appearing. But, like, should they make it, like, explicitly clear? Because, you know, both from just, you know, a marketing perspective, so they can get as many eyeball, maybe not, like, have him, like, explicitly appear next week on Dynamite, but, like, you know, maybe, like, a pre-tape where there's, like, hands with somebody, you know, marking X's or something along those lines where it's, like, explicitly clear. Like, he's going to be on this show, you know, this isn't Hall just been like a massive troll job for the last month. Like, should they do something like that?
I assume, perhaps incorrectly, that there is a storyline reason that will make sense in retrospect why they're taking this approach. I don't know. Eric, what do you think? Is this just like, I mean, in a way, it's just like, we're not going to say it. We're being too cute. And by the time he shows up, everyone knows who's showing up because crowds are chanting it at WWE shows, not just AEW shows. And it's just like a little too cute. And it's like they're withholding the obvious. And I sense that frustration a little bit with Mark. But if there's a kind of a good reason and it's going to make sense, I'm willing to be patient on this. How about you?
Well, three thoughts. One, they still have Friday and Wednesday to, you know, make that a little more clear and be, for the people who maybe aren't on Twitter all day.
Maybe that's
or don't...
Sammy's major announcement. Sammy Guevara is going to announce CM Punk is on.
Well, sure. and then I think you would think TNT would want them to let people know, hey, tune into this show Friday on August 20th because CM Punk is going to debut, right? I mean, I think I recall Tony Khan maybe or one of the AEW higher ups was interviewed earlier this year and said something about I think is that why they announced the big show on TV, like he was going to appear there was somebody earlier this year that they did not, you know, they announced it, they telegraphed it in the thinking of they could pop a bigger rating and maybe they were irritated that they didn't announce Sting ahead of time. I can't remember specific details of it. Is that ringing a bell?
Yeah for sure. But then, I think it's safe to say CM Punk is a big enough name that you can announce him ahead of time and get a better rating than if you're being coy about it. And I don't think anybody, you know, TNT or anybody would be mad about it. I think the idea is, did they overhype Christian? Did they overhype Big Show or Paul White? And did they, you know, approach the Sting thing the right way? It's just like, well, whatever the history is, it's like the best thing to do. Unless there's a good storyline reason not to, because there's going to be a big moment where you sort of want it to be official in this moment where it's what people remember forever. And that's fine if they're planning that. But if not, just you know, announce it. But yeah, I mean, they have 2 more days to do it, as you said, 2 more shows.
And my guess from a storyline perspective is what we all kind of saw tonight, which is I had predicted on Twitter, I think what they're going to do is have Kenny and Christian at Rampage in Chicago. Kenny wins and then says, I have no more challengers, and then Cult personality hits, right? That's not too far off from what I think is likely to happen here. I don't like making predictions as a political journalist because you can only be proved wrong most of the time. But my guess is Kenny wins and injures Christian, comes out, you know, on Rampage, and comes out in Chicago on August 20th, week from Friday, and says, I have no more challengers. I can, you know, nobody can beat me. Nobody, you know, I've beaten everybody, you know, does the Roman Reigns thing, which led to Cena coming out. And out hits Cult of Personality, and I get to hear a pop, which is the reason I'm going to Rampage. I'm going to be masked up, but I bought tickets for Rampage because I wanted to see if this will be the biggest pop I've ever heard in my life, right? It's solely, it's literally the only reason I spent the money. It's is will the roof come off the place? Will this surpass Cody and Nick Aldis in at all in? Will this surpass Hogan and Orndorff in a steel cage at the Rosemont Horizon in the mid-80s? I'm genuinely curious. So storyline-wise,
When you're on the ventilator, just blink twice if it was worth it. No, I went to SmackDown a couple weeks ago. I messed up, but yeah. I'm not so sure I'd do it in Florida or Austin, Texas right now, or Louisiana, a couple other, you know, places where things are out of control. But I feel like it's well, anyway, pretty safe. Attendee beware, I guess, and be safe. So, Mark, anything you want to say to what we had to say about that?
Well, Eric, if you're going to be on a ventilator, I'll be on the one next to you because I'm going to be at that show as well.
Yes. Yep. All right. All right.
I guess.
Go ahead.
Last thing. So I guess this. I don't know if you know. If Eric's right, then you know this question is moot. But assuming that you know it is Christian versus Omega at All Out, and then it's you know Punk versus Darby, and you know they have probably Jericho, MJF, you know Moxley, Tanahashi. If All Out being Punk's return match. Is the reason they decided not to do Page Omega? Is that a good reason, or do you think they should have just done that match at All Out anyway?
Yeah, I mean, Eric, you had strong feelings on this a couple weeks back. Hangman Page he's been written out, a passing mention from Omega, but it's not like the announcers are preoccupied with how he's doing and what's next for him, and it's all about Christian and others. It's like the old days where Hangman Page gave his notice or something, or you get injured and Vince McMahon is like, well, then you're dead to me. You know, I'm not going to mention you until you're healthy and of use to me again. It's just weird how he went from a central figure to just sort of,
Yeah, I was really hot a few weeks ago at that finish. I wanted to pop for Hangman winning the belt at All Out. If I don't catch COVID from the Rampage show, I'll be there at All Out. I was equally sore when they announced Christian versus Kenny at All Out, like just tossed it off, matter of factly at the start of the show tonight. And I was still pretty hot. I was like, God, how predictable, how terrible. Really? They're really going to do this. And then as soon as they announced that, that Christian will be challenging Kenny for the Impact title for whatever odd reason that has yet to be explained on our Rampage this Friday. I know that's just not how Tony Khan has booked anything. He doesn't.
He's not
going to
give away for free his main event to his marquee pay-per-view early and just say, well, it's a different belt, so thus it's worth paying $50 for.
Yeah.
No way.
It's not how they book. I mean, they don't run matches back a lot. Jericho, MJF will be an exception, and Moxley and Kenny Omega would be another. But generally speaking, they move on, and so then now it's Punk versus Kenny Omega at All Out would be a nice consolation prize. I personally would still prefer Hangman, homegrown star versus Omega, but it's. You know, the two obvious reasons everyone's citing are the newcomers who are coming in, that they're bringing in, and then the backup reason is if Hangman's about to become a father for the first time, he's going to want some time off. So I guess we wait for the payoff to that story.
Yes. I can't imagine how Vince McMahon would react to somebody who's about to get a pay-per-view main event, maybe crowned world champ, and goes, I just want to be there for the birth of my kid instead. Can we do it another time? And I can't imagine how Vince McMahon would react to that if that is what is happening here. Hopefully Tony Khan thinks it's a pretty good life choice, if that's the situation. And, I've only heard it speculated upon, so can't confirm it. All right, Mark, I appreciate it. Any quick closing words from you?
One last thing. Wasn't Dan Lambert supposed to be on tonight's show, or was I missing something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Todd Martin's going to be very disappointed.
They moved it to next week.
Okay.
Said something about, I can't remember what the storyline reason was, but next week he's going to be in Houston, Texas, with two UFC champions. We don't know who they are, and I'm not sure I care.
Probably
when did they mention that? I didn't even pick up on that.
Probably the same two that were there last time.
I saw it on a new, I think it might have been a social media announcement.
Oh, I thought you meant it was said on Dynamite. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Mark, you gotta wait 7 more days. Hope you're okay with that.
I'll be at pins and needles.
Yep. Great to hear from you, Mark. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Yep. You bet. All right, we got someone calling from Pittsburgh. Maybe they're at the show tonight. 412, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, what's up, Wade? Long time no call. Mark from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Mark. Did you attend tonight? Good to talk to you.
Yeah. And awesome. Attended tonight and a couple weeks ago for the house show in Pittsburgh at the PPG Paints Arena, man. Wanted to give you a call, buddy.
Nice. Yeah, so let's talk about the show for a couple of minutes here and what it's like to be in the building. First of all, Jim Ross said, and Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, that the pop for Britt Baker might have been the loudest poppy's ovation is the word he used, he's ever heard for a wrestler coming out. I know Eric wants to be there for the CM Punk ovation a week from Friday at United Center. How big was it for Britt Baker tonight?
Okay, so it's a little bit of hyperbole because I've been in attendance for the pop for Stone Cold Steve Austin in the 1990s in the Pittsburgh Civic Arena. Mm-hmm. So definitely up there. Definitely up there. Been there for that. But, yeah, I mean, that's up there, man. It was amazing,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic.
Yeah. How full was the building tonight? Did it seem like every ticket available was sold?
I mean, the building was full, but I mean, I wasn't paying too much attention to the actual attendance, but yeah, I mean, it was a great atmosphere. And keep in mind too, that I've been to the Peterson Event Center is the Pitt basketball arena. And when WWE comes, it's at the PPG Paints Arena, formerly known as the Console Event Energy Center. And then before that, it was the Civic Arena. So, I mean, the venues are all different in their own ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, but what did you think tonight? I mean, I think Britt Baker is probably like one of the three most over people in the business right now.
Yeah, I led the show with it. I mean, with all the news items dropped on us, I led with Britt Baker. You know, I thought it was a moment for her in Pittsburgh, and I think she's going to have another one on Friday. You know, it's going to be a big week for her as AEW is trying to establish that their women's division can be a selling point for them. She's at the top, and I thought she got a really compelling promo that, you know, she just stepped up and became the centerpiece of that division. And I think she's, you know, backing it up or on the verge of convincing people who aren't sure yet with her performances. Well, Mark, had you been to an AEW show before?
No, it was my first one. But like I said, whenever I went to the house show at the PPG Paints Arena a couple of weeks ago, the entire crowd there was nothing but caring about Cena. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Everyone was there for Cena. I don't know if you did a show about that, but you know, obviously, I mean, it was a house show, but everyone there was for Cena. Everyone, literally, in the freaking building. Like, no one cared about anything else until Cena came out, you know?
I was in Minneapolis for SmackDown a couple Fridays ago, and it was – Cena got by far the biggest pop. And our on-site correspondents, every show, have said Cena is a level above anybody else in terms of crowd pops right now. What was different about your experience having these shows so close to each other in terms of the type of fan and just the vibes you got from the atmosphere in the building? Did it feel like a very different type of fan?
Well, yeah. I mean, the atmosphere is definitely a more adult and loud at the AEW show, you know, loud and rowdy, whereas the WWE house show is more family-based. I mean, I think it's always been that whenever there's been shows in Pittsburgh, because I've been to a lot of them. There's a lot of parents and kids there, you know, and they put on a family friendly show, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just that's just what it is.
Yes. Yep. For sure. Did you see any? Maybe you didn't notice or pay attention, but any WWE merchandise in the building tonight? I would I that would be sort of brave. I was looking on television at the crowd. I saw a lot of AW merch. I didn't see any WWE merch. But did you notice any crossover? Because that's another thing we've been talking about lately on podcasts is it just feels like there's exclusivity between the two shows, that people who go to WWE shows aren't the same people going to AW shows and watching them.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's kind of crazy, because whenever I was at the WWE show a couple weeks ago, there were people talking about AEW, and they didn't like understand that, like, oh, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan are going to AEW, and they didn't understand that. And I'm like, well, I didn't understand like that. Okay, so you only watch SmackDown? Do you only watch Raw? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's kind of what I think, that there is a lot of really a lot of exclusivity, like you said, to what people watch, and that's kind of strange, because I would think that in nowadays that people would be more aware of what's going on.
Yeah, well, people's lives are busy, and you know they take a slice, and you know they're Marvel or DC, but not both. That might be what's going on.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Eric, jump in if you got a question for Mark on his experience tonight.
Did you notice an energy drop in the crowd reactions after that opening match and the post-match angle? I mean, did the crowd keep its energy up throughout?
No, I think it was pretty much always up. Obviously, the biggest thing was everyone was ready for Britt Baker. I think she's probably the most over person in AEW. Now, in Pittsburgh, okay, obviously CM Punk in Chicago, Britt Baker in Pittsburgh, you know. So there's that thing with the hometown thing going on, whereas if Daniel Bryan comes out anywhere, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't really know how to explain that, but I think that, I mean, what do you guys think? Whenever you watch all shows, who's the most over it? I mean, I think Roman Reigns is probably the most over Cena, and I'd probably go Britt Baker in the top three with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think with AEW, there's an ensemble of very, very popular wrestlers with the AEW audience. But I don't know, Eric, is there just a top two or top three and a drop-off like WWE kind of has?
No, everybody's over besides Christian and Andrade, as far as I can tell. AEW crowd loves everybody.
Well, Christian got a good pop. He's got a pretty good promo tonight and got a good pop.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought he won over the crowd.
He did.
Let me ask you, Mark, real specific here. Because when Christian came out, and they announced he's going to get the title shot, the crowd booed, and then they chant CM Punk. And I don't know if I've ever had a more visual representation of somebody's heartbreaking than Christian trying to hold it together for this great big moment.
Right.
I'm gonna outwork everyone. I'm gonna show Edge that I can, you know, my lifetime best friend and rival. I can be a top star. And the crowd just is like, no. But then I thought he recovered pretty nice. He had some good lines. So I want to know tell me about the ebb and flow, Mark, of the Christian reaction during that, like, 10 minutes.
I know. I thought that too. And that's a really good realization of what happened. And then because the ebbs and flows of the crowd throughout the night, and when at the same time he was out there with, you know, Jungle Boy, who's super over, you know, and then everyone just wants to pop and go for and sing the song, right? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Wade, I'm surprised to hear that you liked I guess you said you liked the Christian's promo, because Callis started off with two insider references that I thought were going to drive you up the wall. Finally get that five-star match you always wanted, and
yep.
Then call him a Stanford Stooge.
Well,
no, Christian... See, first of all, Stanford Stooge isn't an insider comment. I mean, it sort of is, but like, You're a WWE guy here in AEW. I mean, you don't. That's not. You had to read, you know, some insider thing this week to get it.
I know every goddamn insider comment too. I mean, I listen to Jim Cornette's podcast, so I mean, you know, everyone knows all these things that they say, and you know, but not everyone in the crowd does.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right. But I think everybody knows who counts. That's Stamford, Connecticut, the headquarters of WWE, and Callis has taken a dig at Christian being a WWE guy. I mean, it's fine. I chuckled at it, and I thought you're going to finally have the 5-star match you always wanted. Eric, I love that line, because if you're going to do it, make it count. And boy, did that sting. Like, that's Kenny's, and at least he didn't say 6 stars. Then that's an eye roll. But Kenny's saying, you know, Kenny's the guy who's going to, you know, finally carry you to a big match before he beats you. I mean, that's on brand for Kenny and Callis. I like to be unpredictable with you, Eric.
No, wait.
Wade, you're the one who's
you're predicting I didn't like that. I'm saying I'm
in the high is the high priest. Okay, so what about Christian firing back with calling him a carny piece of shit? Do you think I guess the AEW crowd probably knows what carny means, right?
It's all that for that worked too. Well, Mark, you're laughing. I got the sense the crowd ate that up.
Now wait. Okay. Are you a Kenny Omega fan?
Who are you talking to?
Wade, are you a Kenny Omega fan? Do you think he's the best wrestler, quote unquote, in the world? The way they portray him.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not into the best. I think it's too subjective to. It's not an argument that I. I mean, he's great. He's top tier. No question about it. I mean, that's like that's a given.
Oh, no.
But has he over the last 2 years is he the best wrestler? I don't know. I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But the idea of Don Callis throwing in Christian's face, you've never had a 5-star match. You'll finally get it from Kenny. I think that's gold. I think that is an insider line that is worth delivering because it's good and it's mean and it rings true and it raises the stakes, and you know. So yeah, I'm fine with it.
Now,
my point, Eric, isn't.
I'll say this. I think the star rating of matches is like the most overrated, like ridiculous thing in the history of the business. Like the matches, like a 5-star match, a 4-star match, a 3-star match. Like who gives a crap? Like Hogan and Rock had a negative 1-star match according to Dave Meltzer, but. It was a damn good match, according to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care about that. Like the star rating thing. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's just so overblown.
Well, I'll say briefly on this. I think it's a good shorthand way to convey, with a level of obvious, hopefully inherent subjectivity that people take, you know, that people build into the star rating, that lets people know, because it goes back to the taped rating days. What match is worth going out of your way to see if you're in this as a fan for great matches. Now, I don't know a lot of people who are casual fans who are deciding to go to a show based on match quality. I don't. I think Vince McMahon makes a lot of money off of people who haven't given a second of thought to how good a match is. But every fan feels it if it's good or not. But they're not thinking of, they're not talking about it. But obviously, if you walk away from a show and you saw a lot of good matches, you're going to think you got more of your money's worth than if you go to a show and it's 2/3 bad matches. And the star rating is just a shorthand way to tell fans who want to chase down or value or pay respects to people who put in the effort and have the skill to have that type of match that they crave. It's a shorthand way to express how good it was. And I'm fine with it as long as you don't blow it out of proportion as the definition of being a big draw or the definition of having, you know, accomplished your job well, given your place on the card and your place on the roster. It's not a 2D puzzle where you just drop stars down and determine someone's worth based on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as WWE goes right now, I mean, why would you watch SmackDown? If you watch it for Heyman's promos or Reigns matches.
for the month of August, you're watching for John Cena, I think, if he's your cup of tea.
But I think I get Mark's point, which is you don't tune into SmackDown so you can add up how many stars they drop on you over 2 hours. You're watching because you're into the characters and the storylines, and built in is an expectation of in-ring competence where they take you on a ride and tell a good story, but it's not about a traditional Kenny Omega-type star accumulation. And I get that, and that's true. And it's the most-watched show every week on television, and if they had better wrestling than they feature and a better roster, they'd probably have more people watching. But they do what they're doing isn't star rating. Their goal isn't to maximize star ratings on SmackDown. They have a different approach, and it's entertaining a lot of people and getting a lot of praise from people who aren't stacking up, throwing all the stars.
We kind of got off the subject, but I'm saying right now, I think that I really think that right now, AEW is when this conversation started. I think that right now AEW is doing a really lot of good stuff, and I think that WWE Raw is like probably my least favorite show, and SmackDown is good because of Heyman and Reigns and what they're doing with the Usos and everything with Cena. And what they're building there.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean,
Mark,
this is an eight. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, stop the presses. You have Raw number three out of those three shows? Really? No, I'm kidding. Mm-hmm. Of course. totally. Mark, I don't want this to turn into us having lunch talking about wrestling here. I want to get to other callers out of respect to them being on hold. So, but I want to just grill you for a few other things just about the live experience, and then we'll let you go.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, don't apologize. I'm catching myself getting wrapped up in talking to you, so it's not a bad thing. I'm just saying go ahead, Eric.
I don't know what your stance is on spoilers, Wade. Can we ask Mark if any news was made in any other matches that were taped for Dark or Dark Elevation? Were there any
I'm not telling you any spoilers. Come on, man. I'm not Dave Meltzer. I'm not Brian Alvarez. Come on.
Well, here's the thing. Two things. Let me define this because I want to define terms here.
I guess I'm looking for news. Yeah.
If something happens in front of a live ticket paying audience, that is news. You should ahead of time, if it hasn't aired yet, out as a courtesy to your listeners, say, hey, if you don't want to know what's going to happen, just be prepared. Hit the fast forward 30-second button. It is a different kind of spoiler when you get inside information on a story that is 3 or 4 or 6 weeks away from being told. No one has knowledge of it other than the writers, and you just blurt out what's going to happen. That's ruining the end of a movie, or it's not ruining, but for some people it is. It's discourteous to give away the ending of a movie or a big twist in a TV series if they've already filmed it, but it hasn't aired yet. So to me, there's different kinds of spoilers. The ones that are in front of a crowd, give a warning, and the ones that nobody knows but the writers, and in which case, don't say it without plenty of padding for people to escape. So go ahead, Mark. What happened? What happened out there?
Nothing. Came home.
was it just Dynamite? 2 hours ago?
I came home and then called the PW Torch hotline to talk to Wade Keller.
So what, after Dynamite ended, did they go to more matches and you just left? Is that the gist of it?
Yeah.
You said yes?
Yeah.
So fair enough. Yep. Cool. Anything else you want to tell us about being in the building tonight? Any chance or commercial break stuff or anything else kind of interesting that you think people on TV didn't see that you got to see?
I think Mark Madden's really over, too.
Was he in the crowd?
I don't know, but everyone loves Mark Madden, right? Didn't he used to work for PW Torch?
Yes. All right, Mark, we're losing a little focus, and I do want to get to other callers. So I appreciate you calling. Good to get a vibe from in the building, and we'll talk to you down the line, all right?
All right, bye.
Cool, all right. It's always an adventure. All right, we'll head to Shane in Detroit. Shane, thanks for holding so long. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade, Greg, how are you tonight?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I mean, so I guess initially after that first match, I mean, I kind of felt at home, like it kind of took some wind out. It was interesting that they're going to do the Impact title with Omega and Christian. That kind of brought that back to life. Has anyone talked about Dante Martin tonight? I missed the first little bit of the show.
Yeah, we actually did a couple minutes just raving about his his performance tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, he blew me away. That was an amazing performance. So I'm interested to see what they do. But otherwise, I mean, the show was kind of, slow at parts. I'm curious to see, they've done this thing pretty good where they move on to the next challenger pretty seamlessly at times. They almost kind of like you're talking about with Death Triangle, where they're kind of going, okay, you guys are, next to challenge. But for the men's belts, I think they announced that they're going to do another title after Rampage kind of starts. And I'm just kind of curious what you guys' thoughts are on maybe what kind of classification that might be. I know speculation, but there's so many really good people in AEW that they kind of get, I wouldn't say buried, but pushed down a little bit once they kind of show up and they end up losing matches that, are really good, but then they don't get that title. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's. I think it has more positive than negative, but there's definitely negative to having as many wrestlers as AEW has, and they get rotated in and then rotated out. The Acclaimed were a fixture of Dynamite for a while, even setting aside the rap controversy. And then they sort of, if you're not watching Dark, are they still with the company? They sort of disappeared. But it keeps things fresh, and it allows them to move someone into a top spot and then kind of rotate them, ease them out. Sometimes they, like Orange Cassidy in a world title match, and now he's lower on the card, but a presence on Dynamite. Others appear and then disappear. And then, people like Sammy Guevara, he did a run in tonight. He's got a big announcement next week. They announced him for a match. But for a while, he was like one of the main guys on the show. And now it just seems like he's a guy on the show. Eric, your thoughts?
To Shane's point about introducing another title or question, I hope it's a trios title, a six-man title. Your other option. I don't want another men's singles title. They don't even have a program for Miro with the TNT belts. Your other obvious option would be a women's tag title. Again, they can't even program the women's singles belt all that effectively. Promotions historically have not done a great job outside of Mexico. Have not done a great job with six-man titles. I remember. The NWA had them, and they were mostly an afterthought. Dusty and the Road Warriors, that kind of thing. And
Ring of Honor.
Right. I guess Ring of Honor is doing something with them, but New Japan, they're mostly an afterthought. They're getting a little more shine and rub now because they just don't have much else to go with. So they've talked about he's having a trios title. After that cruise, the first cruise they did, they teased it. And so, maybe that's where we're headed. And they do so many six-man tags. They had two tonight, which is probably one more than you really needed for a show. Maybe that's what they could do. Can I get a amen for trios titles or no?
You can get amen. I'm on Team Ross with this. You can have a six-man title, but not a trios title. That's just a little too precious. I'm fine with that. They have enough wrestlers. I think they can tell some stories. My default mode is just like no more belts. But if you're going to have them, and then it's not like I'm like, oh, the worst thing ever, but you better make, as you said, Shane, have a reason for the title to exist. Give it parameters. I like the structure of an explicit TV title. It's defended every other week. There's a contender match on the alternate weeks, a champion contenders match every other week where two people who aren't champ, they fight for a right. Some things happen on Dark that determine who's going to get to face off for a chance to win the TV title. And there's some, definition, which is you can have never to be in contention for the TV title. You can never have competed for the TNT or world title. Make it a stepping stone title that the second you rise to a level of wrestling for one of the two major singles titles, you eliminate yourself from that division. So it really is a breakout star type ongoing title for people who want to make a name for themselves against other people who haven't been up there. You could even build in, a veteran who declares they're entering that division after losing, you know, world title matches or something, but there has to be some, like, you know, ramifications, which is you can't challenge for the major singles title for like a full year if you lower yourself down to that, if you want to kind of mix a Sean Spears type in other words, to that mix. But whatever. I mean, you can brainstorm about it. Give me some parameters. Give me a reason for the championship. I don't want there to be a world television title defended at house shows, a Western States Heritage title defended in Florida, a U.S. title and a national title, and a world title all in the promotion at once. Copyright Jim Crockett, Dusty Rhodes. So, you know, and NXT is almost that bad right now. There's a cruiserweight title that is no different than the North American title in terms of anything, you know, in terms of who's fighting for it, and barely the world title. So, yeah. There's my general spiel on that. Shane, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I mean, you guys made a lot of good points. I wasn't even thinking about trios. I know that they did kind of mention that. And, you know, AEW does have a lot of stables, you know, which is good because it gives people TV time. But they definitely have a lot of stables. So you could definitely, you know, have people challenging for that. Like I said, I just, you know, it's kind of like when WWE brought in AJ Styles years ago and it felt really exciting. And then, you know, he won and then he dropped. And then it just kind of sounded like they kind of pushed him further down. And, it, you know, as a fan, you know, I'm here for the ride. But sometimes, you know, that drop really sucks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's definitely a lot of guys there that are doing really good work. And, you know, to have more than, you know, just the elite holding all the belts except for, you know, Britt Baker, you know, it'd just be nice to – I don't know if they're about ready to have everyone drop belts here, but, you know, I'm definitely ready to see some other people get an opportunity, you know. So that's it for me tonight.
Cool. Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it. Good contribution. I think the six-man titles as a, like, you know, a title that's kind of associated with Rampage, it gives a chance for the factions or, you know, a tag team with a singles wrestler associated with them, in the case of, say, FTR and Sean Spears or something like that, to be engaged in feuds that just sort of have some built-in meaning. And, I mean, I've lived through World Class Championship Wrestling in real time with the Freebirds and the Von Erichs and Devastation Incorporated and, you know, a few mix-and-match teams along the way. And, you know, if it's done right, it can feel important and relevant, and especially if it's just kept on Rampage, just sort of like the signature titles of that show. Yeah, I mean, that works. And you can fill some TV time up, rotate stars into contendership or feuds, and you know, as AEW likes to do, Eric, have a lot of action going on all at once. I mean, there were times tonight where it felt like a Battle Royal and a Lumberjack match with run-ins all happening at once. I mean, it's just at some point when you're trying to type up a report, I thought Jake Barnett said, you know, this is just too much. There's like, this is making my job very difficult.
Yeah, it's fast-paced and never boring. Even if everything doesn't land.
Yeah, and even if in the end so much comes at you that a lot of it doesn't stick. You know, it's a lot of effort with diminishing payoff because it just sort of all blends in. But, I mean, there's something to be said for an adrenaline rush of athleticism. And, you know, hopefully you have wrestlers who can stick the landing and you know, hit the spots. But I'm into a happy medium, you know, where there's a little bit more selling and a little bit more psychology, but I'm not bored or upset when I watch really talented athletic wrestlers doing a lot of cool spots. But it can be numbing, you know. I just think pragmatically you can kind of numb your audience to it meaning much after a while. Let's go to Hitton in London, Ontario next. Hitton, welcome. Thanks for holding. What do you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey guys. Excuse me, sorry, I've got some allergies. I thought it was a good show. I wanted to bring up the QT Marshall segment involving Tony Schiavone. So here he is, QT Marshall, we haven't seen for a while, and for some reason he just kept delaying the apology, and he's using Schiavone's son to get heat, only to lead to Paul White coming out in defense. And I'm like, okay, what do I think of QT Marshall as being Paul White's first opponent? Well, they did kind of foreshadow that during that weigh-in with Cody, I believe, several weeks ago, where Paul White was like, don't look at me like that, it'll be your last or something. But I don't really know how to feel about this. I'm not a Big Show hater. I would really like to see him, you know, in these sort of undercard feuds, but my God, I want QT Marshall off my television screen. What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have, you know, be reminded that Paul White's in the company. You know, for the majority of Dynamite viewers who aren't listening or watching Elevation, you know, he's a decent get. But I don't know. I mean, QT Marshall, he's fine on Dark. I just don't know he should be taking up precious TV time. I mean, he is the saltine cracker of professional wrestlers on television right now. He's just stiff and bland, and I just don't see a lot of value in him in big doses. And on occasion, maybe it's okay. But it seems like he could be doing something more important with Big Show. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, I didn't hate it, but it's just sort of like, is that really the best use of TV time with the talent they have? What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'll make it unanimous. My notes say, why shoehorn in a QT Marshall apology bit? My next note was, oh yeah, that's right. He formats the shows. So, he could squeeze his own thing in.
He's going to host Jeopardy next.
I guess the nice thing to say about this is they shoehorned it in, and that meant the main event had less time to fill, because I don't know if we could have done with a 15-minute Jericho Wardlow match. So there, I'm trying to be positive. I guess I'm trying to make sense of it. Is this going to lead to a match, Paul White versus QT Marshall?
Probably Nick Camerato, or maybe a 2-on-1. Maybe they do 1-on-1, but I see QT as sort of like the agitating manager who stands at ringside while someone fights for him at this point, despite Cody giving a favor to QT of a, you know, singles match.
Yeah, I mean, if Paul White only has a limited number of matches left in him, why are we squandering it against QT's stable or QT himself? I guess it makes sense from a storytelling perspective, because Paul White is Tony Schiavone's AEW Dark Elevation broadcast partner. So
right. Yeah.
It made sense to me that he was the one doing the run out. But if you don't watch Elevation, you probably forgot Big Show was in the promotion, right? Is he going to be on Rampage? Did they announce him last week?
It's Taz, Excalibur, Taz, Jericho, and Mark Henry.
Okay.
So, I did that off the top of my head. I have to say it's my proudest moment today.
So Hinton's recall on the weigh-in and the skirmish that Marshall had with Big Show, that's amazing recall, because, you know, there may not even be people in AEW who remember that. Anyway, I am not looking forward to the match, and I cannot say I cared about this segment in any way.
All right, Hinton, anything else? I think we've hit our QT quota that I've instilled on.
Yeah. I'll move on then to Malachi Black and his little segment there. I mean, I think he's a good talker. I think he's the type of eccentricity that this company needs. But there are aspects of his character I don't really understand. And it seems as though he's probably explained this on stream or something, but like, I don't get the black eye. I don't get the antlers. Apparently he likes solitude, okay, but I don't really know what his constitution is other than a very basic, I think I'm a badass, and I'll just go after whoever I want. Like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be feeling some supernatural vibes from him or if he's just like some deranged, vindictive human being. So do you think this mystery to his character is good, or has this mystery already been explained and I'm just overlooking it? Or what do you guys make of the character so far?
Yeah, I come away from his promos in WWE and now in AEW feeling like I had a lot of kind of mysterious dark platitudes thrown my way that if you just scripted them out and tried to deconstruct and explain to someone what they all meant, it would take more effort than a wrestling promo should. That said, there's a vibe he gives off, and there's something to be said for just giving off a certain vibe and throwing a bunch of, like, you know, song lyric platitudes at people and, you know, little cliches that you maybe present as being more original and profound than they are. But if you can back it up in the ring and in the end result is this guy's a badass and he's a loner, maybe it's good enough. What do you think, Eric? I'm definitely curious your take.
I mean, it's too soon to render a verdict, I think. I think he is over and has some momentum. The eye thing is just him selling the Rey Mysterio, Seth Rollins stuff from WWE. I believe that's the explanation for that. The antlers, I viewed it as like a callback to like, I mean, I know this, that Tommy End is into that, you know, that sort of weird stuff. Back in the 80s, we called it heavy metal kind of imagery. But the antlers, True Detective Season 1, weren't antlers like a big thing in that very creepy, very good, excellent first season of that show? But, you know, you can't – if he's going to be mysterious, I guess we will either unpack that in the coming weeks and months or – he'll be sort of one-dimensional, which he would not be alone in AEW if he ends up in that camp.
I mean, the gist of his promo was, I'm a loner, and when I'm done with my opponents, they'll feel so desolate and alone, they'll only want to talk to shadows. Like, what does that mean? I mean, like, I have no idea. His victims will be speaking in a low volume once they realize they've been arguing with God. Is that a thing? Like, it's a bunch of things he's presenting that maybe are references to something that I'm not hip to, you know, like, but I mean, but it's still cool. And I think he's believable. I think he believes what he's saying. He doesn't feel like, you know, someone pretending to, you know, like Sean Spears can pull this off. QT Marshall can pull this off. I mean, he scares me a little, you know, I mean, he's believable. Yeah. Eric.
I like Malachi Black, but the way you just framed this up, and I'm going to show my age here, but Spinal Tap, the movie, is, you know, it's a classic. I recall their song Stonehenge. In ancient times, hundreds of years before the dawn of history, lived a strange race of people, the Druids. No one knows who they were or what they were doing, but their legacy remains. You could have subbed those words into the promo and you wouldn't be that far off, right?
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was done for comedy, so... Thank you.
And you know what? And that's the thing. You got to make sure. That's a great, great. Did you just recall that? Like,
no,
you have to remember
it? I
was going to say. I like you a little better because of that.
I could probably got three quarters of it, to be honest.
Okay.
Just right. Need a little help.
Yeah. It's a classic line. What you don't want is you don't want the joke to be on Tommy End, that he's taken himself, you know, let's say this for Cody, taking himself way more seriously than he should. You know, you don't want him to be unself-aware. And I don't think the gimmick goes into that territory. Hinton, back to you.
Yeah, the one thing I think I understood about the gimmick is, Cody, you're lonely, and therefore you surround yourself with people. I wish he kind of leaned into that more, and maybe when Cody comes back, he'll do that. But speaking of Cody, I do not like that they juxtaposed that promo, that creepy promo, with this reality show plug. And the way they led into it made it even worse, because they thought they were going to save face by having one of the commentators say, kind of like, this is what Cody's been up to, filming this. And I'll tell you what, after this match, maybe he wishes he was back to this state of mind. I'm like, so clearly that means he shouldn't have been filming this reality show, and he should have been focused on his wrestling career. That's why he lost. And to top it all off, like, you have Brandi Rhodes in that same ad basically confirming, I'm a bit of an egomaniac. I don't think she was sarcastic. I don't think she was quoting anyone. But after seeing this ad, I'm like, I'm quite happy Malachi Black did away with Cody, because I'm not looking forward to Cody's return here. So, your thoughts on not just this, but just the placement of this next to that Malachi promo?
It's totally smart to put it on after Dynamite on September 29th, but I'm really sad that I'll be hosting the post show. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll have Zach host that Wednesday so I can watch the post show. And that, because, I mean, I don't want to be an hour behind on what Cody and Brandi reveal about themselves on this show. I mean, the line, and they showed it earlier, to like weeks and weeks ago, that Brandi saying, I'm tired of us breaking our necks for everybody else. I mean, like, I need context for that, but without context, I can't imagine there's many wrestlers who want to share space with her backstage. I mean, so I'm very eager to see what Cody and Brandi reveal about themselves here. There is a level of sometimes a lack of self-awareness to both of them And Cody, I think it works to a degree in his favor because he just carries himself like Elvis or a rock star. But with Brandy, I'm not so sure there's enough equity there to get away with what this commercial portended, Eric. Your thoughts?
I was hoping you would tee off a little more than that. I look forward to hearing every word you have to say about roads to the top.
I'm glad there's a pun in the title. You know, I love puns.
Yes. I know Cody is not the best in-ring guy, you know, the three-star Cody nickname, but I have to say he's been in some of the stuff that has connected with me emotionally the most. I mean, the Nick Aldis match that I talk about every time I'm on here from All In, and then the match with his brother, Dustin, was it the first Double or Nothing? I was literally in tears at the end of that match with that promo. I mean, it was fantastic. And so I think there's real peril. You know, reality shows are horrible and awful and stupid and scripted and you know, everything we've come to hate about them since Survivor came on the landscape, 20 years ago. There's a real danger here of Cody, this going poorly for him and him not coming across well and him losing that sort of connection he has with the fans, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm Danger Will Robinson here about this. Maybe I'm a little, you know, am I going too far? Or?
No, I mean, if they're willing to pivot to him being a heel, I the reality show can totally play into that. I mean, Brandy is going to be a potentially really effective heel manager or valet or, you know, whatever, you know, partner to Cody on air. She's not going to want to be given a subservient label to whatever Cody's doing, even though obviously she should because Cody's, like, been in this business for a very long time and been in a lot of big matches and you know, can take bumps that look realistic. But, you know, I mean, she has a chance to be really effective as, I don't know, Yoko Ono-like in the sense of just, you know, like fans can see her. I don't know. I mean, I guess Cody, I don't think Cody's going to come across as being manipulated by her. I think Cody will be a partner in turning the fans off to them as a couple, if that's how it comes across. But, you know, I mean, Miz and Marie snuck up on a lot of people. They're likable. They're cool in their, you know, mom and dad, you know, raising a family type way. So, I mean, I'm trying to be objective and fair. You know, I am not at all surprised by his response. And I mean, what I saw has not dissuaded me from thinking this is going to be mock-worthy and potentially, like you say, damaging if Cody wants to be the centerpiece hero babyface to hardcore wrestling fans. But I got to see more than, you know, 45 seconds of clips. But it doesn't seem like a particularly entertaining show if I weren't in the market to comment on it as part of my job or if I wasn't curious about Cody and Brandy. You know, I don't know how many people are going to find them really interesting, but we'll see. I mean, it's you know, manipulated, unscripted, but, you know, whatever nonsense that reality shows are.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a work, right? I guess the question I have is we probably may get the answer to the question, how much self-awareness does Brandi Rhodes really have? And Cody, for that matter, right?
Yep. All right, Hinton, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, just wanted to conclude with, I don't know if it's Brandy or Cody, but at least the producer of that ad has enough self-awareness because he put those two Brandy quotes. I'm an egomaniac, and why are we breaking our necks for other people? And those are like her centerpiece quotes. So I imagine the producer's at least self-aware. But that's all I got, guys. I got to take my allergy meds now. Thank you very much for taking my call. Good talking to you guys. And stay tuned for the Rampage Hits or Misses, which I'll be covering for the Torch on.
Congrats.
Excellent. Thank you, Hinton. Appreciate it. Look forward to that.
Thanks.
Yep. All right. We'll take one more call here, and then we'll get to Javier for a little roundtable discussion. Bryant in Boston, thanks for holding. What stood out on Dynamite tonight from you other than probably disliking intensely the Young Bucks match?
Actually, the Young Bucks match I thought was fairly good, but
all right.
That's not really what I want to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about is I have a question about QT Marshall. Is he like moonlighting as a PBA bowler or something?
Totally,
he's always like every freaking week he's wearing a bowling shirt. I mean, that would explain why he stinks as a fixture on TV, because he's too focused on his professional bowling career. But I had to switch to other comedic material because I already made two Sean Spears fart jokes on here, so I had to do something else. But were you asking Mark if there was anything newsworthy on the AEW Dark and the AEW Dark Elevation tapings?
I was trying to check it there, but I failed miserably.
We're just wondering if anything happened off air that he was witness to that would be interesting to pass along, and then he brought up Mark Madden, so we just kind of moved on.
Yeah.
He was wrong. There was something that occurred, and I wasn't even there, but Kira Hogan actually debuted on, I believe it was an AEW Dark Elevation taping against Hikaru Shida, so... I mean, say what you want about the degree of newsworthiness, but I think it's worth noting. I think if she hasn't been signed by Khan already, I think she will be very soon, because they badly need depth for that women's division, and I think it's a foregone conclusion she's going to be with them. So, I mean, that was really the only newsworthy thing that I could think of that happened. But anyway, I'm only going to talk about one thing tonight. Just mainly the women's thing, because there's like so much to talk about there. I'll start off with the negative part. That Chris Statlander and Nyla Rose, I mean, I was kind of expecting a botch fest because those two aren't exactly known for being the safest workers in the industry. But I guess they kept the match short. I wouldn't know. I fast forwarded through a lot of it because I didn't really care. But, I mean, it was a nice way to put Chris Statlander over, and I'm assuming she's probably going to challenge Baker for the title at All Out, and Baker's going to beat her, and that'll probably set up Thunder Rosa for Full Gear. At least that's what I think, because, I don't know, Statlander doesn't really do it for me. But I have to say, I did like that promo by Camille. I mean, I really like how they kind of brought her into it, and I mean... I think she could give Jake Cargill a run for her money with her size. Plus, you know, her face doesn't look like a cheese grater. But anyway, Baker's promo was great, and she really plays the tweener role well. And it was kind of nice to get a little bit of heat on Velvet by having her come out and jump and jumper. So overall, I thought the women's segments were pretty good, but I did want to close with this, because I know Javier is probably hyperventilating a little bit waiting on the phone, but I did want to ask one question, and then I'll take the answer off air. How do you think they're going to debut CM Punk next Friday night? Not this Friday, next Friday, because Punk was interviewed about the heel show he's doing, and he basically confirmed that he's going to be in Chicago on August 20th. And he pretty much all but confirmed that he's going to be on the AEW show for all intents and purposes. So I'm just wondering, how do you think they're going to have him come out? Are they going to have like some sort of elite segment, and then he'll just come out, interrupt, and cut a promo on him, or are they just going to have him come out at the beginning of the show or something? So I'm just curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah.
So I'll hang up and take your guys' answer, and have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah. First, before I get to Punk, I do want to say the Britt Baker as a tweener is still intriguing. I'm not sure. I don't believe in deliberately having like tweeners. I think it's just kind of muddying emotions of fans in a genre that is best gives you clear reasons to either like or not like someone. And by definition, if you're a tweener, it means you're not given full permission or reason to be for someone, but also you're giving conflicting information to not really be against them. And I just, it just seems like when you have control over that, why would you do that? Like I like watching NFL games between a team I love and a team I hate, not between two teams I'm indifferent towards or one I'm indifferent towards and one I sort of like or don't. It's just, why do that if you have control? That said, Baker just sort of putting herself up there as like a contextual, you know, sometimes it's a baby face you might root for, fine. Sometimes I'm against a heel who you're rooting for me to beat, fine. If they don't have enough depth of other stars, I can kind of see this as one of those occasions, Eric, where maybe it makes sense to have a tweener on top who's sort of, you know, the top of the division, everyone come get me, cheer or boo, I'm a star. Again, it's, you don't want to do it by design, but in this context, I think it might, I might be warming up to the idea of, for now, going that direction with it.
And I think it's sort of a happy accident for them, if that's the case, because yeah. Britt's mannerisms and her promos are of a heel, right? You're sort mm-hmm. of classic heel, and she's just been doing it for so long. So she was injured during a lot of her face, a lot of her, promo time and when they were waiting for her to come back, and she was healing it up for so long, she's already entered the, we were ready to turn her babyface part of her run, right?
Yeah.
So, which was just, you know, unfortunate injury, but yeah, but it, the happy part of it is, as we've talked about earlier on the show, they don't have a ton of opponents for her who are believable and who, and certainly they don't have, maybe Thunder Rosa can match her on the mic, probably at least get in the ballpark. Hikaru Shida would have a real hard time with that. They would have to do a pre-tape like NXT does with Kushida and Io sometimes. They are that does provide a convenient out for them. And I guess at the end of the day, as we've said a bunch of times, the crowd's not going to boo Britt anyway. So just go with it.
As far as Punk goes, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show. I think there are dozens of ways you can, you know, debut him, different variations. But there's, you know, broad categories. You announce ahead of time CM Punk's going to make his debut on Friday, and he comes out at the top of the show and his music plays, and he cuts a promo, and the crowd goes nuts. Or this Friday, he makes an unannounced appearance in Kenny Omega, or on a big screen. A CM Punk logo shows up or something when Kenny, you know, beats up Christian and Christian has a broken leg and they cart him off and Kenny goes, I guess I'm not going to be at All Out. And then boom, they end with, they end the segment with an image of, you know, CM Punk on the screen. And it's not logical. You know, Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville can't make sense of it. Why does CM Punk get to march in and get a title shot ahead of other contenders with this win-loss ranking record? But no one's, you know, you just make that an exception and you go, well, let's abandon all logic and let's just go with it because people are going to pay to see it. And we apologize in advance for it making no sports sense that he'd get a shot. Or do they have something really, you know, specific in mind to get them there if they're going to do Punk Kenny at All Out? Maybe they do. Punk and Darby, but I haven't invested a lot in that just because Darby dropped the hint. Because if they do it, I don't know how they make sense of it. Eric, I don't know. I mean, I could sit here and ramble, you know, rattle off a bunch of scenarios, but I'm eager to see what Tony and Punk have in mind. I assume they put thought into it and put their heads together and they have something they feel good about because the options are almost limitless what they can do to bring them in. So I would hope they pick a good choice among those.
I think the first path you outlined, I'll call that the ratings path. You announce it ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
That's the, we want to pop the biggest rating possible. I still think Rampage ends up being, I think you had good data on this before when AEW was out of its time slot due to the NBA playoffs and they were on Friday nights. You had good DVR stats just how many, I mean, it was a crazy percentage of people. I don't know if it was most, but it was many people watching it later, right? Watching it the next morning or, you know, the plus two or, you know, within 24 hours. You could see a lot of that with Rampage as well, I think. There's the ratings path or the we need a main event for All Out that's going to justify the seven figures I assume we just dropped on CM Punk, and you do the thing we talked about earlier, which is, you know, Kenny doing the Roman Reigns promo, I have no more opponents, and CM Punk's music hits. The Darby path?
Well, real quick, too. On that, like, because I can imagine Kenny beating Christian. Christian's clearly hurt. Don Callis or Kenny says, clearly there's nobody left. Adam Page isn't around. Christian is too hurt. So here's what I'll do. I'm a malevolent world champion leader of this company. I am going to give the title shot to the next person who walks out onto the stage. And then I imagine everyone scrambling to the entrance right now. First one to run out gets the title shot. And CM, you know, music hits, CM Punk walks off, boom. Now Kenny has, you know, volunteered to defend. Just, they might just do that. You know, and it's Kenny declaring he'll face anyone, thinking, you know, ostensibly he's outsmarting everyone because it's going to be some scrub. And instead, CM Punk just happens to be there. So that's, again, just a scenario like that I think works well enough and gets people excited. And it sort of has a storyline explanation where Tony, you know, signs off on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that anybody knows how, the length of CM Punk's contract, right?
I haven't seen that.
Right, is he in for... A short run? Is he in for, is he 3 years at, you know, X million per
year? Is he
going to
be on as much as Sting? Cody lately, yeah.
Right, and so what is it? But he will never be hotter than, you know, the first couple weeks, right? Strike while the iron's hot, and that sure seems like the path they're headed down. The Darby path is, Punk is almost the heel in that situation, right? Potentially, or it's a face versus face match, and that's not the way to go. But I'd much rather see Punk get the title shot right off the bat than wait 6 months till he's cooled off, right? And the novelty's worn off. It seems like they figured that out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead. I think I interrupted. I don't know if you were finishing your point or following up on mine in terms of where you're going, but I know I jumped in.
Yeah, I think, you know, one point I wanted to make just more broadly is, since it involves Christian and Punk, is I think earlier in the year we were talking about how Tony Schiavone starting last December was focused on getting the next million viewers. And, he's gotten, the ratings are improved. They seem to be settling in the million one ballpark on a normal week now. But, you know, there's sort of phases. Like, the first phase was Sting and then the Paul White Christian combo. And Sting helped a little bit. Paul White and Christian definitely did not help. Then we've got the second phase where we've got Malakai Black and Andrade. And I think that they're maybe, you know, the jury's still out. And now we're doing this third phase. Of spending money and bringing in Punk and Danielson. And I think it is Punk and Danielson are the two that are going to maybe make the most headway toward getting them, you know, the next million viewers, right? If they play it right. And so it's just interesting, the arc of so much has happened in AEW since December of 2020. And, you know, normally that would be the type of stuff you could spool out over years, but it's all, everything is just sped up because they're a TV company and that's how they make their money. They've got to get ratings and share the ad pie. So September, you know, heck, starting August 20th through, you know, the end of the year could be really an amazing, newsworthy, exciting time in wrestling. It already probably has been from your perspective covering it day to day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And by the way, the July 21st Dynamite had 1.412 million viewers. It's the third episode of Dynamite to have recorded over 1.4 million views after 7 days. The another one was episode number one, which did 1.7. And then there was one other 1.4 million in there after 7 days back on April 14th, the first week they were unopposed by NXT and got a big bump in the live viewership. And then they had the usual leap of a couple hundred extra thousand in the following 6 days. So
calculating Tony Khan's getting the next million viewers, is he 40% of the way there because of the plus seven? Okay.
Yeah. 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 I think, you know, and advertisers like live viewership the most, but the drop off to people who watch on delay is a lot smaller than it used to be. I mean, the TV industry advertising people say advertisers ask a lot about the plus three and plus seven now too. So,
okay.
And that 1.4 million are pay-per-view customers. They're people who buy tickets to house shows. They're people who buy merchandise. They're people who add views on social media and likes on social media, all the metrics, those extra 400,000 people or 300,000 people, they count. You know, just doesn't matter. Doesn't really matter if they watch late, they're still being sold on ordering a pay-per-view. So, yeah, to me, 1.4 is 40% of the way to that second million. Now, we'll see, you know, how the next few weeks do, and if they, you know, build momentum, especially with Punk and Brian coming in. Anyway, should we shift to Javier?
Javier.
Let's do it. Javier, let's see here. What music should I play?
Now, PW
Torch presents Javier. Hey, Javier.
That was a fun way. That, wow, that's easy.
Good,
that's awesome. Spoken language.
Yeah,
Eric, how's it going?
So, Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP podcaster, PWTorch.com contributor, writes pay-per-view previews, New Japan Pride podcast, other things, and we bring them on late in the show here for a little roundtable discussion to fill in gaps on what we haven't talked about or to straighten us out if we got anything wrong. Javier, what's up first?
Well, I got to say I'm a little bit upset with Hitton because I wanted to bring up what I thought was the best part of the show, which was the whole QT Marshall Big Show future conversation we're going to have. Although, I do think that if it is like Camarado and they use Big Show to, you know, give Camarado some shine, I think that'll be a good idea. So, you know, it's not going to be the main event or anything. So, but yeah, that was definitely what the big news coming out of this for me now. It was funny because when you were talking, I was writing down one of the big things I noticed, like overall throughout the show. I was writing, is it just me or does this show have what Wade calls a lot of elbow grease more than usual? Just as you were saying that earlier today.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, did it seem like there were, cause it seemed like there's like way more than the skits that they did. And I think there was only one match that went over 10 minutes and they put in a lot
like
more
one of their,
vignettes and stuff.
It felt like one of their, pre-taped post-produced matches in the pandemic era where they just, you know, they refined it and did a lot less live stuff cause they could. And that's why I was kind of curious from an in-person perspective, what it would be like in the crowd if you're looking that much at the big screen and there aren't those marathon matches, but you know, if they're doing other tapings and stuff, I mean, I don't know how many people are sitting here going, well, all that counts is the length of matches in Dynamite or the content in Dynamite. But you know, they've prided themselves on having the experience for people in the building be really good. And this had a little bit more, but they're short and to the point, and I think ultimately worth it to have these you know, more intricately produced, but quick segments to keep other things kind of in the conversation or on viewers' minds.
Yeah, and one of them, I think they should dock Alex Abrahantes' pay since he didn't translate.
Yeah, he's just standing there these days. It's weird.
Yeah, what Peta said was, I want him first, referring to Andrade. I want him first to – I can't read – give me a second. I can't read my handwriting. I want him first to demonstrate that we are the true face of the true faces of the Latinos, because Andrade is only a dog without a home. And you know what, Andrade, go bleep your mother. And that was when this guy like, you know, cut him off before he could say the full thing. So that was what Pinta said. So he basically called him a stray dog, and that he's a stray dog, and
was
pretty much
scalded?
Solidified the idea. Huh?
Was he a scalded dog? Jim Ross wants to know.
Well, and it pretty much solidified to me that they're going to be turning on Pac at All Out when this match happens. I think that's what's going to end up happening.
Interesting. Yep.
It feels like they're too buddy-buddy. This feels like that wrestling angle. Like that, you know, it smells to me like that, because, you know, what are these three going to do unless they're introduce a new stable for Andrade? And I can't really, you know, picture, you know, who's out there that might come in for him to lead. I think him taking over Pac and Penta would probably be the direction that they end up going.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. What else have you?
On the Hangman Page thing, I still think that unless there is, you know, the whole him having a child thing that ends up, you know, deciding to, because, I mean, for sure it was originally scheduled to be, Omega and Paige for the pay-per-view, but, you know, the CM Punk thing, obviously. But I think that they might also be setting something up with the, you know, I've mentioned it a few times, but last week when the Young Bucks were talking about not having a challenger and stuff like that. They've also been talking about they've been very vocal about how Hangman Page left the group. So it seems like the Bucks themselves have more of a something on Hangman Page. So yeah, I still think there's a good chance that this ends up being Page plus partner versus the Young Bucks at the pay-per-view.
And then is it possibly CM Punk? Is that what you're implying or not? Because you think it'll be Kenny and Punk.
I'm thinking that – I don't think it's anything's penciled in because of the Cole situation, because the easy one is Frankie Kazarian, because he's, you know, he also has a beef with the Elite. I'm sure he's going to be involved. He did make the save – he did attempt to make the save on Paige last week. So I think that he's going to be involved in some way, shape, or form. But since if he does jump to AEW, Cole's available, you could just scratch out, Kazarian and put in Cole if he becomes available. Other than that, you could have Kazarian and Hangman Page against the Bucks in a revenge. The Bucks trying to get revenge on Hangman Page for what he did to them way back when.
Yeah, makes sense. Eric, any thoughts on any of that?
I don't know what Adam – well, I guess, does Adam Cole have a non-compete?
No, he signed a short-term extension earlier this summer, reportedly, and I think he'd be
after
SummerSlam Sunday.
Yeah, is there not? SummerSlam. Yeah, we don't know if the short-term one had a non-compete in it or not, right? I mean, just I would think they're not going to head that way. They seem to be indicating Bucks and Penta Phoenix, Lucha Brothers again.
Coming to Rampage two weeks from Friday, maybe, instead. You know what I mean? Like, there's other places they can drop those if they don't think they're pay-per-view worthy.
I think the Page story is not a – we've already seen the tag match, you know, tag team story with Page and Omega versus the Bucks. I think Page – the whole point of Page breaking up with the Dark Order has been, I need to do this go where I'm going solo. You know, that's why the Evil Uno and Stu Grayson held him back
right.
He took the beat down. So I think they have said, here is where my story is, and I'm going to take them at their word. Not to say I wouldn't love a Adam Cole, Hangman Page Bucks match. They would steal the show probably, but I don't think they're headed that way with Mr. Page.
Javier, back to you.
I am definitely not as confident as I was last week. Because last week I was like, for sure. Now I'm like, because of what you said, the whole Penta thing, maybe, and the fact that we didn't see him this week. So they could just have him, you know, be written out for a while. So I'm not as confident as I was last week. But I still think that that's a possibility to be on the lookout. Plus, I mean, it's really weird to predict anything for the pay-per-view, because you have like those big shows. You have First Dance, you know, along the way. And a lot of changes that are about to happen. I think coming to today, there was like nothing really mentioned, you know, no matches really scheduled for the pay-per-view, except for the whole thing I heard about Christian and Omega being on the pay-per-view was during the promo. Cause I hadn't heard yet. It really feels like the pay-per-view is very fluid right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a lineup that I fleshed out while watching the show tonight. Kenny versus Christian, but it'll really be CM Punk. The Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers. Andrade versus Pac, which they announced tonight. Britt versus Statlander. That's the obvious direction they're going in. Miro versus – we still don't know because he hasn't had a real program since Double or Nothing. Moxley versus Tanahashi. And then from there, I thought we might get – I assumed MJF Jericho was going to be part of that. And it's being blown off on TV next week. I think we have – isn't there a women's battle royal? Women's Battle Royal.
I actually do think that.
Go ahead up here. Yep.
Yeah, I actually think that MJF Jericho thing still happens because my thought was that he's gonna at some point. I think he loses the fifth labor to MJF, probably through shenanigans, and then he wants another match. He's refused, so then he puts up his career, and then that could be the blow off at All Out. MJF versus Jericho for Jericho's career.
Mm.
That's bringing it back pretty quickly, but could do that. And then, where is this Matt Hardy versus Best Friends feud going? Is that Matt Hardy
not
and Orange
Cassidy? Not pay-per-view.
Yeah, probably not. Matt Hardy versus Orange Cassidy, a match, maybe not for the pay-per-view, and then the rematch, Proud and Powerful versus FTR. I don't know when that can happen. I guess it depends on when the Cash Wheeler, who tore his arm up, when he can come back. Yeah. But that's the card I sort of have penciled in, and you're right. There's a lot of flux, but it's starting to come into shape, starting to come into focus a little bit.
Yeah, just don't write anything in pen, I don't think.
Yeah, there's very little of that in pen. That's what's weird. I mean, a couple of them, but yeah. And, when you have Adam Cole as an X Factor and you got CM Punk as an X Factor and I mean, it's weird that, Hangman Page and Cody might not be on this show. Like, that's kind of crazy.
And MJF and Jericho.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, too, yeah.
Yeah, and on the whole Andrade thing, I still am not – I think that, of the big storylines going on, I think that's the one that I still haven't been able to connect with at all just because – I've never bought into the Pac, Penta, Phoenix thing, mainly because it almost always seemed that either someone was, either out because of, the whole travel restriction or one of them was injured. And so they've never really felt like there's this real deep connection between the three of them. And then, with Andrade coming in, and I don't know, I actually not really feeling the Chavo thing too much, because if Andrade were just, saying, cutting a promo in Spanish and then Chavo being his translator, that'd be one thing. But essentially what's going on is that Andrade says, a sentence in English, and then it's almost like Chavo is completing the thought for him. And do the promo in Spanish. I mean, some of my favorite promos on NXT were Io Shirai subtitled. So just let him do it, and then have Chavo then do it in English like they were doing with Alex and Penta.
Yeah.
And particularly since Alex was doing like spot on great translation. So, I mean, I'm just not connecting with the whole storyline. I don't know if it's an Andrade thing. I don't know, if it's like everything I've mentioned, but that's about the least exciting thing of the stuff that they're building up right now.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think they're selling it more on this is going to be a good match than we're going to get you super invested in the drama going in. But I mean, it feels intense. It feels like the stakes are there, and it's not having to carry the heavy burden of selling the pay-per-view. It's more just to, fill it out a little bit with something that feels like it'll be entertaining and hopefully lead to, one or the other, and you don't know who's going to win, moving up the card to something else. I mean, a babyface Pac against a Miro match feels like that would be, I want to see that, And so can you continue this as kind of building the foundation for that, for example? So this feels like a feud that in and of itself is interesting, but it's not off the charts compelling and full of nuance in terms of the personal story, like a Hangman Page thing or, Kenny and the Bucks and all that, or Cody and whatever he's involved in, but it's still, it can lead somewhere and build someone up.
Looking ahead to next week, it looks like they've got a jam-packed show. I was trying to take some notes. MJF Jericho. I think they said Brian Cage and Ricky Starks was next week. Darby and Sting versus whatever that jobber tag team they brought in from NXT. Spears and Sammy 2 and the Bucks on the Jurassic Express. And plus, don't forget Dan Lambert will be there to make to run down modern day wrestling again. So, I mean, that's six segments right there. You think you'd have a women's segment as well, fallout from the women's title match on Rampage, or, you know, maybe moving more towards Statlander. So yeah, next Wednesday's already, we don't usually have this much of an idea of what it is this far ahead of time. It seems like a jam packed show.
Any idea, Javier, first than Eric, what Sammy Guevara's announcement is going to be? Is it just as basic or pedestrian as I want to challenge Miro at All Out, or is there something else going on here?
Maybe he gets interrupted and we never find out. Is that an option?
Do not even put that out there. Of course, the odds are 50-50. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's just unless he's challenging somebody, you know, in the inner circle or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's discontinuing his vlog.
Yeah. You know what his announcement should be? It should be, I refuse to watch Cody and Brandy's reality show. That's his major announcement.
He'd be the biggest babyface in ProWrestlingTorch.com, that's for sure.
Or he can live, he'll do a live watch-along on Twitch or something, like, and make fun of Cody and Brandy. I don't know. No, I mean, I just didn't know if I was missing something that seemed obvious in the you know, lay of the land.
Didn't he lose to MJF? Sammy, right?
Yeah, I think there was some cheating, though.
They had a good match. Yeah, I don't know. That would be the next logical place for him to go, but I don't think that's what they're doing because they've already done it.
All right, anything else for Xavier?
Well, it's funny you brought up Brandy, and I actually sometimes I just write random stuff while I'm listening to the show to the post show, and I wrote I miss Brandy's wrestling. Because it definitely makes these post shows and your hotlines very entertaining when you start going up for matches.
Uh-huh.
So, yes. It's like a special level of, you know, it raises the extra level. So, I mean, it probably also raises your blood pressure next level. So, you know, but
I will say this, for the record for people, I have my opinions, and I can express them in a demonstrative fashion, and I can do so in a way that might seem like it's like I'm taking it with me out of the office, or, you know, can't sleep at night because of it, or I'm grinding my teeth, and it is not. It's very ephemeral. It's very in the moment, here's my thought, and then it's just turn the page. So no blood pressure. I'm not that. There's very little I get that worked up about, even if in the context of wrestling, for the sake of emphasizing my opinion, which I firmly believe, there's no phoniness to the opinion. I'm just saying I also have life in perspective. Like Brandy being, you know, unself-aware does not actually raise my blood pressure, but I do, you know, take some joy in pointing it out, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that's
what,
like,
if Brandy's working?
Life lesson.
I have seen, well... she's working when the cameras aren't on then, too, Eric. I'll just put it that
way. Okay. Yeah, that's what I figured.
go ahead, Javier. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's good. You know, that's life lesson 101. You know, don't take it home with you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I know this is just a me personal thing, but I just love the fact that the first match ever on Rampage is going to be for the Impact World title.
I know. That's so weird.
It's just the weirdest thing, yeah. You know?
Every little bit counts out here, and I wonder if with Impact on Thursday night, that's going to be plugged or mentioned. And it's just sort of a way to give a little extra oomph to try to, you know, if Tony's worried about that Friday night rating, well, we'll put the Impact title on. That gives us another, you know, 100,000, give or take, who are going to hear about it on Thursday, who might not be I mean, Impact has their fans who only watch Impact and watching Dynamite for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, I thought today was wild with the Good Brothers and versus Dark Order, having that title being held on there. But just, like, to think that the first ever match is going to be Christian Cage versus Kenny Omega, which, you know, okay, fine, I get it, but for the Impact title, just like, wow, that's going to be one for the history books.
Yeah,
But I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it actually, I mentioned it a while ago that, because I think I mentioned with Tanahashi and Archer, I was slightly disappointed when it was going to resurgence a bit of on Dynamite. And it's the same thing. It's like, it made me care for it because it's just like another company's title on the line. I have no idea why. It's, I think it's because it's one of the things I like, because you brought up Marvel versus DC earlier. And early on with DC, their thing was, what made Marvel special, DC's thing was you had like Batman and Superman each with their own comic. And then when you had Justice League, that was kind of like its own world too. So like what Batman was doing in his own comic wasn't affecting what was happening in the Justice League comic. Marvel, when they came around, was some, they basically said, we're just one world. So when the Fantastic Four were doing their stuff and they ran, you know, and then Spider-Man guest starred, Spider-Man was talking about the stuff that he did in his world. So it was much more world building in that. And I think that's what I like about with AEW, because they don't shy away from like the NWAs and Impact and stuff, that they basically, you know, they're not the only wrestling that exists. It just makes me, you know, and because I do follow a lot of these other ones, you know, it's cool because they're referencing stuff that, while they'll definitely have less fans, because the only one that has more fans would be WWE. You know, it's cool to know that they acknowledge the existence of other people, and that's neat, as opposed to like playing in their own sandbox.
Yeah, good background, more than I knew.
It's like the AW universe, or like the wrestling universe, the real word of universe, as opposed to the WWE universe, you know?
I know, they screwed that up. They screwed that up.
So I think that pretty much covers most anything I had.
Cool.
Good talking to you again, Eric. Maybe if I ever get back to a regular recording schedule on New Japan Pride Podcast instead of like randomly, I'll get to getting guests again, and I will invite you again.
And I hope New Japan commits news worthy of you doing a podcast.
Yeah.
No, I'm still doing it. It's just like, it's random days because it's just, you know, poor schedule. So that's why I don't want to like commit to anybody right now, because you know, it's like I may not be able to make, you know, if I say Sunday, I might not be able to make it on Sunday. Everybody check out New Japan Pride Podcast, Go VIP, check that out, and all the other stuff. So have a good night, guys.
Great. Thanks, Javier. Yep, you have a good night, too. All right. We'll read just a couple emails here that cover a little territory we didn't cover. Eric will do a quick, and we'll sign off. Chris B. in Long Island said, I thought Dynamite was just fantastic tonight because not only were most of the matches solid, the stories are building simply have me invested. AEW is doing a great job allowing fans to enjoy tonight's show while also leaving us plenty to look forward to on Friday's Rampage and next Wednesday's Dynamite. The Britt Baker promo was stellar to promote Friday's Rampage premiere, and the Five Labors of Jericho has been a cleverly crafted TV angle that is now building to its crescendo next Wednesday. On a show that didn't have Hangman Page or Jon Moxley, there was no noticeable drop-off in star power or investment from me watching at home. That's what happens when you have a well-rounded roster and stories that are captivating to go along with great action. Thanks, Wade, and go VIP. So it's Crispy in Long Island. It is crazy when you think, if you had said, you know, a year ago or back 2 years ago, AEW is going to sign, they've got Cody Rhodes, and they're going to sign Big Show and Mark Henry. And, well, the Big Show's a bad example this week. And Jon Moxley, I'm trying to think of who else. And they're not going to be on an episode of Dynamite, but the show will still feel plentiful in terms of, like, there's plenty of stars. Like, AEW can have a every other week type rotation in terms of, you know, if they have, grab a random number, 14 top acts, you know, who are just kind of, you know, tag teams, women, singles, men. If they've got, you know, 10 top singles and 2 top tag teams, 2 top women, or however you want to divide it up, they can actually go every other week where maybe a vignette, maybe not, you see them. And then people like Moxley or Cody can take a month off and they just come back fresher. It's not like there's this big gaping hole. Where with Raw, when Randy Orton wasn't around, like, he came back this week and it's like, oh, that's right. He adds some needed star power because there's just such a big drop off when it comes from main event down to kind of the mid card show filler stuff. Eric. Any thoughts on that? Are you muted? I cannot hear you, Eric. Hello, hello. Eric. What's going on? What happened? It says you're still here. Let's see. I think my internet's up. Eric, can you hear me? I don't know. All right. I'll just, I'll move on to another email. Another email here. Ed in High Desert, California said, good evening, Wade and Eric. I hope that's your first name. LOL. With the first match, I'm curious, was it 250-50? And also with this match, the ref should DQ the Bucks for how many times they jumped in and at the end for being in the ring so long. That should be part of these tag matches. A ref can decide to DQ and actually use it. For the labors, I don't think this has gone on too long. Jericho should have lost at number three. Or I'm sorry, I do think this has gone on too long. Jericho should have lost at number three. Put someone over. I don't know. Maybe Miro would be a good wrestler to use. Then Jericho goes away for a few months and then have him attack members of the Pinnacle, leaving clues. Leading to Jericho MJF. I think this has dragged a bit. Hoovy Jericho took some of the air out for me. I think Jericho losing would have been better. I'm still lost to what Impact gets out of this deal. Is it the rub from the Cool Wrestling Company? I know Omega has appeared a few times on Impact, but this seems to benefit AEW and Tony Khan much more. They get all this credit for working with other companies and mentioning Impact. Christian against Omega is a bit flat for the pay-per-view and gets even flatter with them matching up on Dynamite for another title. Belt, does Omega lose first, and does losing one a first affect how viewing the other, how it's viewed losing the other? And so anyway, those are a couple points. It's a long email, but those are a couple things to read. Eric, it sounds like you might be back.
I am back. We lost power and internet for about 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome back.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I don't know what you picked up on, but the question about if Jericho Omega went too long and which belt does Omega lose first?
Omega might lose the is that how you say it? Belt on Saturday night, right? Isn't that when the Triple
yeah.
Mania is?
Yeah.
On the 14th. Yeah, he may lose that one. I mean, if I had to lay odds, you know, he's been champion for a long time, hasn't been able to come in because of the pandemic. You'd think they'd want to go with Andrade there. Yeah. Could be wrong about that, but that would be my guess.
He also asked, and I don't know if you're back yet, he asked if the opening sixth man was 250-50. Considering the competition, Bucks and Omega against Dante and the Seidels, they don't seem too worried about it. You know, it might be a fault of generosity. You know, they're generous to a fault. Cody sometimes has gone a little longer than maybe advisable against talent not at his level on Dynamite. With Kenny and the Bucks, did they give too much to Dante and Seidel before they won?
I mean, I think we've sort of been trained by AEW that the opening match is generally going to be the one that gets the most time, and a squash match would not have been entertaining for 13 minutes, 15 minutes, however long the match was. So could it have been, you know, should the heels have gotten a little more offense given the quality of competition? Maybe, but I think that match was designed to be an exciting spot fest, and it was. And so that's what you're going to get when you have a spot fest, right? Guys just doing moves
yeah.
to each other, and there you are.
It's a philosophical question about an exciting competitive match that you win. Is it okay to do that against lower card or mid card talent? Does it hurt you? And I think in the end, the trade-off is you get a longer, more competitive, more exciting match. And if in the end you win, but you make somebody lower look better, I don't think it's a big drop-off. I think, you know, Cody and QT going even Steven without cheating diminishes Cody because QT is QT. But a young, exciting, you know, Dante Martin having a career moment, I think that offsets any negative.
I mean,
go ahead.
Some of the other matches tonight were, like, Darby was losing his match formula is to lose the entire match until he gets his comeback and wins, right?
Yeah.
And then Wardlow took, you know, 90% of that match against Jericho. And surprisingly,
I think it said like this, he took 90%. It was just plotting. Like, you have to say it plotting for effect. I mean, it was just like,
yeah,
all right, let's get going.
And surprisingly, the Dark Order took a ton of that match against the Good Brothers. So it was sort of a theme of unbalanced matches tonight, right? Throughout the whole show, I noticed. But go ahead.
So he also wanted to know if, considering Dynamite tanked, at least in the immediate ratings on Friday nights, even with pre- and post-pay-per-view shows, what realistically is the expected rating for Rampage? What's a good premiere rating, and what's a good rating, or we'll say probably viewership, because we talk more about that overall. Hey, Eric, have you thought about that at all, like where you think, you know, success, the success level is in terms of viewership?
I guess it depends if you're going live or plus seven, right? Or even plus two, maybe in this case, because I think as you've ably reported during the month of June, many people were watching it Saturday morning, right? Firing up Saturday at some point during the day, firing up what they missed from the night before. What were they doing against the NBA? About 500,000?
When they got bumped to other nights, it wasn't so much being against the NBA as it was just being bumped to after it or on a different night. Trying to think what...
500,000 live, and then, you know, they were back up to 800,000,
900,000. Yeah. Here's the chart. So they did 1,936,000 and 821,000 the 3 weeks before they were bumped. And then when they started getting bumped, they did 426, 462, 487, 552. So... to me, Rampage with the buzz, the first week, I think should do – I think to me the over-under, if I'm taking bets in, what Tony and TNT will be happy with would be – because last week live, Dynamite did 1.1 million. I think they got to do 750 or better for it to seem like a success. I don't think that's – I think that's a reasonable number. If I'm trying to, you know, see it from both ends, you know, Tony not wanting to overpromise, but also, you know, not make it seem like he's setting the bar just obscenely low so we can leap over it with a rating. 750 sounds like a reasonable expectation. Maybe he's hoping for 8 or 9, but maybe he's also looking at those NBA, you know, the numbers when they got bumped and it was definitely under 700 and sometimes in the 500s. Maybe he's thinking, no, if we're doing 400 and 500 or something, then maybe a better estimate is 600 or so for the heavily hyped Rampage. What do you think, Eric?
Well, the one thing they have going for them now that they didn't when their time slot was moved in June is they have the Wednesday time slot to hype the Friday night show, right?
Yep.
So they've got a great promotional vehicle. They didn't have that. Like, it was just, hey, I'm tuning in for my 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday appointment viewing with Dynamite, and it's not here, and then maybe I try and figure out why, and maybe I don't.
Yeah.
And then I guess to me, I'm far more interested in week two.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And obviously there's two paths there. They announced CM Punk is going to be on the show to pop the biggest possible rating, or they don't. And they just rely on, you know, you heard all the chants tonight. You rely on these sort of informed, everyone expects it. People who read the news, newsletters and websites and, follow social media to, you know,
so,
that's
Eric,
less of a crowd, right?
If they announce it, it is less of a crowd, but if they announce it,
they have
to
do a million, right? If they announce the bar is a million, I think, if they announce it.
I think it should be higher.
Million,
I mean,
five?
I know it's, I'm not going to go that, but if you announce CM Punk ahead of time, I think anything less than live viewership of like 1.2 would be disappointing, even though it would be one of the highest rated hours of Dynamite ever, because it's freaking CM Punk, and you announced it ahead of time, and it's a sold-out United Center, and you get to inherit the SmackDown crowd for people just flipping the channel. They don't have to rearrange their schedules. Like, I mean, if they didn't have Punk, I wouldn't even go there, but it's Punk. It should – that's a – like, I don't – it might even be crazy higher than that, but it could be crazy lower. Like, I'm with you. I am excited if they announce him ahead of time. I'm really excited to see what announcing it officially a week or 2 days ahead of time, what it brings to Friday night at 10 Eastern.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, after that, who knows? Is it 700,000, 750, is that the bar for, the, you know, going forward? I guess it depends on how much they keep up their promise that it's a, it's the 1A show as opposed to, you know, the B show, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am curious about the United Center crowd because, I believe, it was reported in the Observer, that 3,500 of the sort of like 14,000 or so tickets they sold because they blocked off a whole big part of that arena for the stage.
Yeah.
3,500 were, you know, secondary market tickets, the scalpers, right?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to upgrade my tickets. So I saw on social media that they'd opened up a few more seats and I was looking to see where they were. And I looked at the Ticketmaster chart. There is a ton of red, which is indicates available seating. I mean, it's all over the arena. It's like the tickets don't seem to be moving that quickly. Maybe that changes if Punk is announced. But I wonder if it's a bunch of scalpers. Are they just, what do they do? Do they eat the tickets? Do they, you know, and then that seat is empty. And so we've got a United Center that doesn't look quite as full as you might have imagined when you heard it sold out so quickly. I'm just curious as to how that that plays out in the next, what is it, 9-10 days till August 20th.
I think the market, you know, jumps in and the prices get lower and a bunch of people who weren't going to spend a lot of money just end up spending money. I mean, I think that probably is where things go. I think the building will end up being full, even if some of the tickets are being just given away at the last second. But yeah, I mean, there's, I'm looking at Ticketmaster now. I mean, there's, you can get in for $30 and in the 300 section, there's actually a section 114 seat for $25 each. So go grab them, people. It's kind of behind the stage, but still. It's going to look good either way. I think they'll fill it out, Eric. Might have lost Eric again. They're having power outages over there. So I will wrap up the mailbag there. We got a few more. I might get to them tomorrow on the Wade Keller Podcast Blue Logo Show. We've gone crazy long here. So thanks to Eric Kroll. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the Wade Keller Blue Logo Show. And then also Friday after SmackDown, we'll kind of live watch Rampage while we're doing the SmackDown post show, by the way. So we invite you to do the same with us. Thanks, everybody. And until next time, on behalf of Eric Kroll, Wade Keller signing off.